Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. That is Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts. Thank you for joining us today for Top 5 Good Performances in Bad Movies. Anderson, I ended up liking this category quite a bit. What about you?
No, I don't know.
Turns out there's a lot of bad movies out there. And it turns out there's a lot of good performances from bad movies as well.
Brian, once again, the whole purpose of the show is to talk about movies people should see. This topic here does not lend itself to that. So don't listen. Be on the flick fashion here, kids. Save yourself 40 minutes of your life and don't listen.
I do like when we can get a topic where it opens it up to movies that we would normally never talk about. I have a couple here that have never come up on the top five and some that may never otherwise. And, you know, it sucks being hard on movies. Sometimes, you know, it's clear that people didn't try very hard or that there wasn't quite as much effort put into a certain film as opposed to others. But it's nice when you can pull something redeeming out of a bad movie, an objectively bad movie. And if there's something redeeming in there to be pulled out and talked about, it's kind of nice. So I define the positive in something in a not-so-wonderful experience.
Yes, but are we saying go out and see this not-so-good movie because there's something decent in it?
Maybe.
I think the whole point of this episode will be, oh, yeah, that's a good one. I didn't think about that one. I already saw that movie. There's no way I'm going to go revisit it. My favorite kind of show that we do, Brad, is like top five anything good. I guess this is top five
something good.
But yeah, but it's not like go run out, check it out.
No, but this will be...
This is a Brian topic, if there ever was one.
This is a footnote to cinematic history.
So, speaking of which, want to do that soon, quickly.
Oh, you
want
to do top five first?
Top five first. Top five Hollywood first. Ugh. Let's do it. Stop it. Why? Why? Why that reaction?
I guess we could. You know what?
No, don't guess we can. Just know that we're going to soon.
Yeah, it's coming down the pike.
I'll pike you.
You're racist. You know what this reminds me of? You know what? A podcast I've been listening to a lot lately, and it reminds me of our show, or maybe we remind me of them. I'm confused now, but it reminds me of each other.
What's happening right now.
I listen to Stuff You Should Know from How Stuff Works.
I don't talk about other shows.
It's a good podcast, but it's similar to ours in that they have a topic. It's explaining something, how something works, or something you should know about. And they research it for a week, basically, and they come back and they share their research with each other on the mic, of course. And it's very similar to ours in the sense that it's sort of what we do, too. We do our little research. We can dig up items or factoids or interesting tidbits.
Are you stalling for something? What's going on? Why are you talking about this? What's the point of this?
Trying to avoid talking about the very uncomfortable moment that took place right before our show.
Oh, do you want to talk about that?
Very uncomfortable.
Was that why? Why was that so uncomfortable?
I mean, I would imagine you wouldn't want to talk
about
it.
Brian, you get so weird with the book.
I wouldn't imagine you want to
talk
about it.
Go ahead, talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it.
I'll talk about it.
I don't want to.
Brian comes in, sits down, says some nonsense. I try and block him out. And then he goes, oh, I have something for you. And he runs out to his car. Then he comes back in and he presents me with his book. His stupid face is on the cover.
Half my face.
Half your face. That was a smart move by the editor there.
That was my idea.
The publisher.
Son of a bitch.
Let's put you on the cover, but not all of it. Let's put you half on the cover.
You'll appreciate this because their idea was, we're going to put your face on the cover. And I was like, it feels a little self-aggrandizing. Can we do like something where I'm stylistically like half my face or something? I'm like, love it. Do it.
Okay. And then he hands me his book, and it says Shrinkage. And it's a professional, nice-looking book. And then he tells me.
Would you like to hold it?
I don't want to look at it anymore.
Wow.
This is what happens. All right, wow. Here, I'm half, I shouldn't say half a tard, because that's not appropriate,
sure.
Especially coming from somebody who's worked with mentally challenged over the years. But I am not.
That gives you liberty to say it, though.
No, that's
for
why.
The Farrelly
that's
brothers have taught us one thing.
Did they used to work with mentally challenged?
Yeah, really? You didn't know that?
I don't
that was
know.
Their, like, that's why they always feature mentally challenged people in their movies.
So do I want to, but I want to, they do it in a joking way. I don't like it.
But
they,
that's what gives them liberty. That's what gives them liberty.
I like the pointing and laughing factor, like Dumb and Dumber. That was a movie about mentally challenged dudes that you're supposed to laugh at them. Don't like. No,
well, speaking,
but
speaking of pointing and laughing, my book.
So Brian hands me his book, and he's all weird. He's got this weird energy about him because he's like so vulnerable about the book. I've never seen the man so vulnerable about anything. And I'm not a good reader at all. So I explained to him.
Could we back up a couple weeks? How you harangued me for
I
a
did
copy?
Not harangue.
Harangued?
No.
You guilted
Brian.
Me. You guilted me.
I said, you know, I was trying to be supportive, buddy.
You said, where's my copy?
I'll read your book.
So where's my copy?
I know you want me to read your book, so I'll read it. Long story short, somewhere along the line, he lets me know that I have to, as soon as I'm done reading it, which will probably be 2 months, Brad. I'm slow.
All I said was I need it back. Again, there were two rules. Remember what they were?
Yeah, he had a couple caveats before he handed me the
book.
Two rules. One was, if I have anything bad to say, don't say anything at all. And the other one was, when I'm done, I have to return it to him. And I'm like, you don't understand. When I finish a book, it's a trophy. I put that fucker on display. I'm not giving that book back because I break the spine. Mm-hmm. I take notes in it. Like, it.
Right.
My books travel with me.
I understand that.
No, I don't think you do.
No, because I've seen your books.
Shocked when you heard that I was not going to give this book back. So I've offered numerous times, ways around it. I said I'll buy it when it comes out, and then we can trade up.
But I would like you to read it ahead of time. But here's the reason
I only have two of these, and I'm only getting like 5 hard copies. Oh, what the fuck, dude? What are you going to just have a giant shrine to yourself?
What are you talking about?
You said that you only have 2 of those and that you're getting 5 hard... Enough about the goddamn book.
Movies? I would like you to read it, and you don't seem to want to.
I want to read the book, Brian, but I'm going to keep the goddamn book, all right? Otherwise, it doesn't count.
I have a limited number of these advanced copies, and one's already gone. I gave it to my parents, and so I'm down to a limited number.
You gave your parents one? Do you notice when you say parents, there's an S at the end?
Yeah.
Why'd you give them one book, Brian?
Right. I signed it to Mom and Dad. I said, Mom and Dad, thanks for
They should each get a copy, Brian.
What? No, they share it.
Mm-hmm. How sad would you be if you saw it in the in their bathroom, like underneath a bunch of Playboys? Like they never got to it.
Oh, I was going to say, if it's in the bathroom, means they're actually reading it, probably.
I never understood that. Who sits there and just reads?
I tweet.
I never get that. No, that's gross, bro.
I know.
Ew. All right, okay. Can we talk? Let's flick fast. Let's do this. I'm excited. Okay, flick fashion. Brian.
This week, Not Seen by Anderson, The Inside of My Book.
Plus, Corolla's name is on the spine as big as yours. Insulting! That's insulting shit right there.
Is it? You think, yeah. Should I be insulted?
Surprised they didn't make Corolla be like in the reflection of your glasses. You know what would be nice is Corolla's face in the reflection of your glasses like you're staring. No, you know what would have been accurate is like his balls just hanging in the reflection of your glasses like you're going in for a good suckle. Like
his
you
balls
do.
Are that recognizable? They should put it on the cover on my face?
I guess they want to show up because of the hair. Come on, we're getting gross. Let's go.
You brought it
flick
up.
Flick fashion.
Flick fashions. Time to flick fest. The flicks we've seen in the past week. Mm-hmm. Anderson, I saw 3 flicks. Mm-hmm. 2 good, 1 bad. I will sandwich the bad in between the good. Mm-hmm. First.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. Why are you starting? No, I'm going to go first.
You want to go first?
I'm going first.
Okay.
So I saw a movie that's been out for weeks.
Wait. Important.
Oh.
Follow-up from last week. We received some feedback on our debate on whether or not Brant, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman from The Big Lebowski, was...
Oh, yes.
Did or did not, in fact, pay to watch Bunny.
Chug Cock.
That's right.
Sorry. Crude again.
You're really falling off the wagon.
I know. I'm really. I came into work tonight not sick. I'm feeling super ill.
Nice.
You know when it's just kicking your ass, just beginning to hit you,
and you're dragging,
and you're in that. Yeah, I feel like if I assume this is what our 8% of the ladies that listen to this program feel like as they're about to start bleeding.
Ooh,
I feel a little PMS-y.
Okay,
a little touchy. All right, so I'm sorry. I don't want to read your book, and if I'm being bitchy about it,
it's all right.
So yes. Go ahead. What do the listeners have to say?
Of the dozens of responses, and there were dozens left on AndersonandBrian.com, the message board.
We asked
on,
the listeners to...
Facebook tweeted to me, tweeted to you and me, messages received in many different ways. Mm-hmm. Everyone but one person agreed with you.
Oh,
every
nice.
Single
well, of course
person.
They did, because it's a layup. Wait, one person agreed with you?
His name is Clarence Worley.
Brian Bishop.
He goes by Clarence Worley.
Uh-huh. Oh, he's your favorite listener now.
Now he's my new favorite listener. That's right. Thanks, Clarence. So here's the thing. Okay, so the debate was, in The Big Lebowski, there's a very uncomfortable... Well, it's a funny scene where Brant, played by Phyllis Moroff, and laughs uncomfortably as Bunny Lebowski suggests that...
it would cost an extra $1,000
for him to watch her perform fellatio on The Little Lebowski. The littlest Lebowski, it turns out. Mm-hmm. And so Brant laughs uncomfortably, and everyone is convinced, except for me, apparently. It was obvious to everyone that he was a very innocent soul who was just laughing out of discomfort, yes. And Bunny was making the whole thing up. Now,
Brian, I hope you learned your lesson that you're wrong about most things, and we should not ask.
Oh, is that the lesson earlier?
Yeah, you should not ask for the listener to weigh in, because you will be humiliated publicly.
I don't feel like that was the case. I was humiliated publicly. Let me say this, though. I do appreciate everyone responding, though. First of all, thank you very much for your involvement. Right. I do recognize that I'm in the minority on this one. I do recognize that I'm in the minority on certain things. I don't think The Goonies is a good movie. I mean, a lot of people do.
I'm with you.
I don't like Bob Marley. A lot of people do.
One love, bitch. One love.
I'll bet. Here's the thing, though. Philip Seymour Hoffman, we established, is a fantastic actor. Top 1% of all actors when he was alive. Coen Brothers. Fantastic movie makers. Top 1% of movie makers, filmmakers working today. I would say Coen Brothers up there. I choose to believe, and I don't understand why you all can't at least accept the possibility, you Anderson, mm-hmm. all everyone.
Everyone else.
That
yes.
there was more going on in that. I recognize
Brian,
it.
Brian, let it go.
Let me talk.
Let it go,
stop.
Dude. You're, it's embarrassing.
And it's not at all. It's embarrassing for everyone else, I think, who can't accept the possibility that Philip Seymour Hoffman and the Coen brothers, when they get together, say, you know what? It's obvious what's going on in the scene, but I'm a great actor. You're a great writer-director team. There's maybe something else going on here. There might be another level. There might be a little something behind
Brian,
his laugh.
It's so much funnier the way that it reads to myself and everyone
else. No, it's so much funnier
else.
That he's hiding a
no,
secret. That's,
no,
that's something
no.
that actors do.
It's so much
do.
Funnier that she's fucking with him to that level because he is the little sycophant
no, it's funnier,
that lives there.
No, because
and she has zero respect for him. However, she should have some shred of dignity for that man. She has none to the point where she's going to say the thing that will make him most uncomfortable at that very moment. It's hilarious that she's torturing him.
I can't believe you're digging your heels in on this point where you're sticking to what is the most obvious
Brian,
reading
you,
of the scene.
I don't want to say defeated, but I mean, you're the.
No,
I don't even know because I don't look at Twitter and I definitely don't go to our page other than to show my wife the amazing fan art. I always do that. But you're the one who came to me with the information that there was dozens of responses and Clarence
yeah,
and you are the only two that have this fucked up wrong idea about it. And you're still defending. It's embarrassing. Debate's over. You lost.
No, I would like to open people's eyes to the fact that there might be another way to read the
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe
a more
he was
interesting
actually,
way to read the scene.
Brandt could have actually been Whoopi Goldberg in a white man's suit. And there would have been a scene that where
well,
he unzipped.
That's absurd.
It is. And it's absurd to think that he actually would pay money and beat off watching her chuck.
And plus, Bunny Lebowski,
happen.
The Tara Reid character,
he wasn't
is
that
too
character.
Dumb to be making something up on the fly like that to embarrass him. She's telling the truth. She's an imbecile. She's like, blow my toes. Like, she's that.
She's not
her.
That dumb.
What?
Dude, all gold diggers have some kind of IQ that's beyond the dumb bimbo.
I just can't believe you wouldn't allow for another more interesting
right, Brian,
way to read
yes,
the scene, more sophisticated way to read the scene.
You know what? You're right. I think that not only that, but he probably paid $10,000 on a
oh,
regular
thank
basis.
Thank you very much.
To have anal with her while
okay.
her father watched. That was his real big
that's
thing.
A more interesting
a lot of subtext.
Scene.
I had to dig
of,
deep
yeah.
to find that subtext, but I found it.
Good job.
It's there. Yeah.
Wait,
Brandt doesn't even make that much money. That's another thing, Brian.
He lives rent free probably at the house.
Yeah, but I don't think the big cheap Lebowski's giving him a whole lot of cash.
That's
I
why
think his wages
that's
are...
why he's so into it. He has to pay so much money.
Brian, let it go. Okay. Let it
I'm
go.
Just saying it's an obvious thing.
I saw some movies since I last saw you and talked
wait.
To what's
read the scene. More interesting.
It's not more interesting at all.
It's far more interesting if he's hiding a secret.
Oh Christ. Let's a mental note and Logan write this down. Let's never get into one of these semantic article arguments again about a great scene in a movie. Because now every time I see that scene, it's ruined.
I disagree.
Forever.
I disagree.
And I will see it probably another 10 times in my lifetime, at least.
How is that ruined
God, I love
when you have a
because I'm
going to
think of your face.
Scene.
I'm going to think of you going, yeah, you know what? He probably does do that. Yeah.
Every time Philip Seymour Hoffman makes that laugh, though, you can just picture Brian there.
He's ruining the laugh, which is so perfect. You son of a bitch. All right, here we go. Lone Survivor. Finally saw it. A lot of people were telling me I shouldn't be so mean. I shouldn't be so judgmental with Lone Survivor. From the ad campaign.
Well,
one of the
telling worst, that in general.
One of the worst ad campaigns I've seen in a movie in a long time as far as it pandering to the right.
I don't go home, you don't go home.
The real guy talking about how important it was to make it and Peter Berg's face looking all intense and serious when he's... So I went and saw this movie and I took some notes. Maybe I should pull up my little notes from my little phone. Here's
maybe,
the deal.
Maybe it's time.
Yes, the campaign kind of ruined it for me, so that's one bad thing. Also, I... Love My Platoon. You know that. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. It's been banned. I can't talk about it anymore. I grew up with Platoon. It's one of the first movies that made me realize that I wanted to do something with movies for the rest of my life. And this doesn't hold up. This felt like future A-Team. This felt like the A-Team in the future. You know what
but
I mean?
But it's in the present day, though, right?
Yeah, but
the A-Team
from the 80s
then.
Was
yeah,
so
yeah.
bad. And it felt like this. There's something similar. It was just not great. It opens up with a... with a beheading that was just so these are the bad guys and they're doing a beheading, but it's like cartoony. There was nothing after movies like Black Hawk Down and last year's Zero Dark Thirty. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've come to expect a level of reality with these movies, with these modern day Middle East conflict films. And when you see something like this, it's just cartoony. It's just Ben Forrest's death scene was really, really good. Now I can talk about that because it's called Lone Fucking Survivor. So we know that the Ice-T character is the only one left, right? I say Ice-T because Mark Wahlberg looks just like Ice-T on the poster.
Oh.
I mean, that's Ice-T right there. It's a really weird poster. I don't like the poster.
It's kind of Ice-T-ish.
He looks very Ice-T. He looks very black. Not a single black dude. But, you know, they had to keep it reality. And I guess there was no black dudes on the on the SEALs team. It's based on a true story.
Can't swim.
Based on a true story. That being said, one of the most contrived third acts I've ever seen. Not really? Since Argo. Last year's Argo, which also was based on reality. Have I seen such Hollywood trivial, like, just bullshit at the end. It was such overt bullshit. But turns out it was all real. But the Hollywoodization of how they put it together made it seem so far-fetched and ridiculous. But apparently, I don't want to talk about the ending, but something very unlikely happens that caused this man to be the only one that survived.
Okay.
And it was interesting, and I didn't know that those kinds of things happen within the tribes over there in the Middle East. There's a lot I don't know about the Middle East. But the way that they did it was so black and white and so unrealistic and so difficult to buy. However, it did happen in one form or another, but they put the Hollywood spin on it so that it didn't seem realistic at all. Am I making sense here?
Yeah, it was glossy. What was it, glossy? Or was
it was
just...
definitely glossy. But, I mean, that's coming from me, who I, you know, I refer to Irreversible as often as I can. All right, so that being said, I don't think that you need to run out and see Lone Survivor. That's just me, though.
All right.
I'm a platoon guy. You know, different war, different movie.
It's true.
But, you know, Zero Dark Thirty last year. I saw a movie that I was assigned.
Yes, you were.
It's been 15 years since I've seen this film.
Sitting right here in my hand next to my book.
And I returned it because Brian was nice enough to lend it to me because I didn't want to send away or pay for it because I'm cheap fuck. Philip Seymour Hoffman is in Magnolia, so that's why I came up just last week. He was doing this weird thing in Magnolia, which was channeling John Malkovich.
He was subdued.
It also felt a lot like Happiness, like a better version of Happiness, because there's no denying that Paul Thomas Anderson is, for me, he's the best movie maker making movies today. He's my favorite filmmaker, even if I don't really like the story.
What is on your arm?
Brian, let it go.
Freaking out.
There's a sticker on my arm. Why do you gotta?
Because I can't see it.
Oh my God. Do you understand how unprofessional you are?
Sorry.
Far worse than anything that happens on the After Sester. By the way, last week's episode, very good After Sester. God damn you.
That's Brian. Better.
Can we cut all this shit out? This is ridiculous. What's that on your arm?
Sorry about it. You were saying Magnolia. One of Philip Seymour Hoffman, Paul Thomas Anderson, one of the best filmmakers working today.
I've said on this, I didn't like Magnolia when I first saw it because it was like the greatest movie I'd ever seen. And then 10 minutes later, I'm like, this is awful. I can't stand Jason Robards' dying scenes. And then it would become like, oh my God, I can't believe how fucking good this is. There's no denying Paul Thomas Anderson is probably the greatest working director living today. In my opinion.
And writer, director, or just director?
Writer, director, just everything. I mean, the shit that he did in Magnolia, the stuff that he did pull off and the stuff that he almost did pull off, I still maintain that if he made it today, it'd be a better movie. But, I mean, it was 15 years ago. Paul Thomas Anderson was 15 years younger. But one of the problems was it had this, and I remember seeing it at the time in the theaters in 99, that there's like the first two acts had the same kind of energy and momentum that you see in most movies, like if they have a really good climax.
Right.
But it was unrelenting. Like, it lasted for 90 minutes. It was a 90-minute swelling music climax.
It is kind of relentless. I mean, like, there are several climactic moments. And, like, holy shit, there's more. Like, emotional climaxes, I guess you want to call them.
But I don't know how we maintained that. It was.
It's funny you call the first two acts because the movie almost has no act. It's just vignette after vignette.
Well, it's
almost.
One day. It takes place in a day.
Yep.
And all takes place.
Intersecting stories.
In San Fernando Valley, which I also appreciate because I live right by where he shot a lot of this stuff. And then the last hour of the movie, which I consider the third act, where everything kind of comes together or comes to an end, it ironically and strangely enough, didn't feel like the ending of a lot of other movies. It kind of felt like the middle of most movies, and it kind of lost that. It was unbalanced, to say the least. However, I did appreciate it much, much more. Jason Robards' scenes, I had some really long, long zoom tracking shots in my head where he was just dying. That don't exist, apparently.
No.
I remember it differently in my head because I was so disappointed in the movie that I couldn't keep up that momentum, that pace, that tempo. But I definitely appreciate it. And plus, I've become a much bigger Paul Thomas Anderson fan since I saw it initially in 1999.
Yeah, the Punk Rock Love and all those movies. This was, I think, on my top five character introductions, too, just because of the way you met all the characters in the first, I don't know, 10 minutes of the movie was just, you're at that pace. It was almost frenetic.
And the music that he's using and the camera movements are just unfucking believable. I mean, he just the movie, the camera's constantly moving. However, It's unbalanced, like I said. Now, something weird. I have already bugged my poor wife about this. She doesn't care, I don't think. I don't think anyone will care, but it's one of those things. It's a great mystery.
Well, it's a movie show, so let's hear it.
It's a great mystery. The frog scene, the iconic frog scene.
Frogs falling from the sky.
Yes. That took place right down the street from my house, which is also on the exact same block, about 100 yards away from where Boogie Nights opens, with that great one shot, that single take shot, where it starts on the marquee and then it follows them all the way down the street into the club. That's all in the exact same little area of Reseda, which is close to where I live. For those of you in the Southern California area, go to Sherman Way and Reseda Boulevard, and that's that little corner where it all takes place. There's an A&W seafood Chinese restaurant right there on the corner, which is still there. Shockingly, on the three corners, three of the corners are the exact same as they were 15 years ago today. They're still there.
Really?
Right? Except the mobile station in the movie where they go for cover from the frogs. John C. Reilly and
William H. Macy.
And William H. Macy. Ooh, look at that. John C. Reilly and William H. Macy.
Right. Bill Macy.
Let me jump around a little bit. That's another thing. It's Luis Guzman. He uses his real name, Luis. Yep. Philip Seymour Hoffman's name is Phil. That's kind of odd. I'm sure there's some other people that have the same name.
He wrote it with the actors in mind.
But, and one more thing before I move on and make this last point, which is very confusing to me. 90% of the users like it, 84 critics. And it seems like a critic movie.
It does.
But on Rotten Tomatoes, it's inverse. I was surprised to see that.
Hmm.
I think a lot, it's one of those movies where I think that users feel like they have to like it because they could tell there's something going on. But I don't imagine that 90% actually do like this. You know what I mean?
I can also see how people had the reaction you had when you first saw it, which is probably divided in their own minds. I kind of liked
so
a lot of
great,
it.
It's so great, but then,
I was confused by other parts and not sure if it came together. If it did, was it satisifying?
Tom Cruise is so good.
He's the best he's ever been. Well, he's up there with the best he's ever been.
So, anyways, that corner right there, very, very, there's a big, a trader's store on the side. It's like an old
Trader Joe's.
No, it's like an old trading. It looks like something trading post, like from the West, and it looks like that. The facade is very unique, and that's there clear as day. Now I'm telling you, it's the corner of Reseda and Sherman Way, two big streets that cut through the valley all the way through. They're parallel. They're adjacent. Very recognizable intersection. I paused it. I was freeze framing it and looking and going, my God, I can't believe that's still there. That's still there because I wasn't familiar with that intersection when I first saw this. Now I'm very familiar with it. Here's the weird part. They didn't do like a cutaway or a punch in. They weren't making a point, and there's like a storm going on with frogs flying everywhere. But I could see clear as day the street sign hanging over the street said Laurel Canyon.
Really?
And it doesn't make any sense. It makes no
sense,
Brian.
I thought the street signs all said Magnolia, or the ones they all showed said Magnolia.
I don't recall ever seeing Magnolia Street being shown.
Really?
Magnolia Punch Boulevard. Drunk Love, I think they did.
No, Magnolia Boulevard, hence the title of the movie.
Yeah, I understand that.
Is in there quite
but
a
punched,
bit.
I don't think that. It is. Okay. But it's very odd that. Very,
that
very
is strange.
So that's that.
Is it a continuous shot or is it a cutaway?
No, it's not a continuous shot. In fact, and it's not CGI because it was done in 99, which is kind of interesting. I noticed that when I was really studying that scene, all the frogs weren't in the street. They were just when they go into the storefront, you can see they're just on the sidewalk, but obviously they weren't allowed. They couldn't block off the street and put frogs. So the street is completely empty of frogs, which is
interesting.
A continuity error, obviously.
Right. But it goes so fast, you're looking at so many different things.
But it's so strange that it says Laurel Canyon. It's one of those things if I got to meet Paul Thomas Anderson and ask him one question, that would be it. Why? Why does it say Laurel Canyon?
You probably
Canyon?
Get this a lot, Paul. Hey, speaking of
going back to the Gangs in New York.
Yeah,
that freeze frame.
Crazy.
Of course, season.
Marty, you probably get this a lot.
All right, go ahead.
Speaking of other ways to read things and things that are probably incorrect but are interesting nonetheless, I always had an interesting theory, a theory about Magnolia that I found interesting, and maybe it would be the first thing that I asked Paul Thomas Anderson. But, the way the characters talk in this movie is peculiar. They ramble, and they speak in a peculiar manner. You picked up on this? When John C. Reilly was saying to Melora Walters, I'll be good to you. I'll be a good.
I think they're playing off each other's energy, and she was a speed freak. So
you're probably right. But here is how I always choose to read almost all the dialogue in the movie, almost all of the sort of monologues when the characters ramble. I think, and this could be a weird Paul Thomas Anderson writing thing. It could be subtle. I've never seen him talk about this. It feels to me like you are hearing their thoughts. They are speaking their thoughts. You're hearing their inner monologue. Like when Quiz Kid Donnie Smith gets drunk and he's rambling about oral surgery.
I think there's definitely something there.
He's talking about the oral surgery and all this, and he's rambling.
All the way down to the songs that they're all singing.
Yeah, the songs. Like
you hum a song to yourself,
yeah, exactly.
Or you have a song stuck in your head.
Songs playing in your head.
Yeah.
But there's so much going on in that movie that I'll never be explained fully that it's one possibility. But I always felt like the characters were you're hearing their inner monologue.
A very ambitious movie, and it's so great in so many ways. But it just didn't. I still don't think it's an almost great movie. Almost great.
I love it, and I think it's great. I think there's a 2-hour flawless movie.
I will drop kick these dogs. I'm telling you, I will drop kick.
I will drop kick these dogs, Phil. Drop kick these dogs.
3 hours, 8 minutes. There is a very good 2-hour movie in there.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Finally, Brian.
Mm.
There was a movie that critics are freaking out about.
Mm.
It's called The Lego Movie.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Have you seen this thing?
No. I mean, 99% of Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't think it's 99. I think
it was.
It's like 94 or something.
It's 96 now.
96, yeah.
It's dropped quite a bit.
So I went to see this just so I could see what all the hubbub was about.
Sure.
Come on. Really? Fucking Lego Movie.
Seriously.
I was let down.
Well, I imagine your expectations are quite high.
That the critics are only at 96%. I can't imagine a critic not liking this movie.
Really?
I don't understand that 4%. What the fuck's wrong with you guys?
Really enjoyable?
Everything's awesome, Brian. Everything is awesome. Have you seen this thing, Logan?
No, I really want to, though.
Lego Logan. You will love it. Brian, you're going to love this movie.
Okay.
You're going to absolutely love this movie.
I'm in.
You know who's not going to love this movie?
Hmm.
The fat kids that were in the theater with me.
Really?
Talking throughout, wandering about.
Don't know what good thing when they get it.
I should not admit this, Brian, but as I did with the American Hustle.
Did you weep?
I was crying.
Oh, no.
A lot of crying.
Oh, no.
Made me cry a lot.
You're gonna get a CPS called on you.
I was crying. It was that
man,
good, Brian.
Was there a tattooed man in the theater crying alone?
I'm not weeping. I'm not openly weeping, but tears were streaming down the face because it was so fucking inventive and clever and good. Now, not a perfect movie. Got to button it up. Not a perfect movie. There were some sequences where I found myself drifting and thinking about other stuff. And some of the animation, it's all CGI, and they made it to look like it was stop motion like they do, kind of like South Park does. Speaking of South Park, it definitely had the same tone as South Park without the filth. Quite often, I felt it was so clever and it was so smart, and there was so much going on. I could definitely see this again and pick up on stuff that I missed.
All right.
I was shocked that Lego. Now, Lego's, I guess, is a Norwegian company or like a Scandinavian company. They must be an Americanized. It didn't make sense that anyone would greenlight this movie. The movie is about followers being fucking worthless and how we all live in a society where we just overpay for coffee and get up and go to work and get taken advantage of by the man, and we're okay with it.
Nice.
I mean, it's like 1984. It's I don't understand I don't understand how it got greenlit. By the end, you kind of understand a little bit more with the messages and how they actually end up, and it makes a little more sense that it got greenlit. But bravo to the Fox over there at WB that said yes to this thing, because I'm sure that they had much. Because essentially it's like a 90-minute ad for Legos,
yeah,
and Legoland, right? Like Battleship with Peter Berg's Battleship last year. I would have banned this movie, but you know all the hubbub. I felt like I had to go see it, and beyond pleasantly surprised. And I went in, and I'm trying not to oversell it, like I do sometimes. But I went in thinking there's no way this is going to stack up to what the critics are saying. However, I think that maybe it's the look of the animation and what kids have come to expect with fucking robots and whatnot at this point. But I can tell you this: the 6 kids that were in the theater with me, I don't think any of them enjoyed it. I found myself telling a mother to put a lid on it. I don't know why. I became like a guy from the 70s. I'm like, hey, could you put a lid on it? Furious with that little fucker.
Nice.
Oh. And then the song, it was like a perfect, just the stars were aligning, Brian, when there's a song that's so catchy called Everything is Awesome,
mm-hmm.
and you see it right towards the beginning of the movie, and I had to listen to that on YouTube, and then it occurred to me, I'm like, this sounds very familiar. Wait, these voices sound so familiar, man. Lonely Island! Lonely Island, doing nice. A little Everything is Awesome. Oh, it's so good. Anyways.
It sounds it reminds me of... what you were saying reminds me of one of my entries in my top 5, which is this could have been a very throwaway, you know, they could have just churned it out and made a bunch of money, but they really put a lot of effort into it, and it was nice and surprising that way. One of my top 5s is a character that could have very easily been cut out of the movie in the script process, but they decided to make something interesting out of it in an otherwise bad movie, and it's refreshing.
Yes. Huh? I thought you were going to an example.
Like I will give you the example later, but I'm saying one of my top fives.
Not since Toy Story have I been this impressed with a new movie and from a new genre. Not a new genre, but a new storyline. And oh, and stick through the credits for Batman's amazing fucking song that Will Arnett gets to in the credits. Make sure you watch those credits.
Okay.
Great fucking movie. Fantastic movie.
I'm in.
I hope I didn't oversell it.
You sold it quite a bit.
I don't think you should bring your kids. Not because it's inappropriate, but just because it'll go over their dumb little heads.
I did see one of the quotes on the commercial saying, like, you'll want to sneak back in afterwards so you can see about your kids.
That's a stupid quote.
Huh? That's what I said. Three movies from me.
Everything is awesome.
Two good, one bad.
Mm-hmm.
I'll sandwich the bad between the good to rid yourself of the taste. First, a movie I learned about through you, Anderson, through you.
Serbian film?
Surprisingly, no.
Actually, you know what? Lego Movie reminded me a little bit of Serbian film at times.
In what way?
Because it was all about how the man is forcing you to do things that you don't even realize you don't want to do.
It's interesting how two movies can have unique takes on that,
yeah,
that theme.
Very unique.
Very unique. A little different. Wait, was there newborn porn in one of them? And if so, which one?
Lego Movie is all newborn porn, essentially.
Oh, my God. Because it's all
little kids,
interlocking
little
pieces?
Yes.
Oh, no. Interlocking pieces over and over again.
And they're all kind of brand new and shiny.
Oh, no.
Which you realize at the end how shiny and new they are.
Oh.
Okay.
Sorry, I feel like we wandered into dangerous.
That was
territory.
A dumb joke. That was sophomoric. I apologize.
Cut it out.
Serbian.
First film. A film I learned about through you, which is surprising because it's right up my alley. It's a very Brian type of film. Talk about Somme.
That's a very Brian movie, yes.
2012. Somme, directed by Jason Wise, is a documentary. It's streaming.
It's a documentary about rich white fucks, and they shoehorn a black dude in there just so they aren't called racist.
See, I can't tell if the white fucks are rich or not. They're going to be rich someday. But yeah. I can't tell if they're rich right now.
I don't think you get in the wine tasting business if you grow up in the urban community.
It's a well, what about the black guy?
Yeah, they shoehorned him in. I think he was created. His character was created for the documentary.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, really? So he's a complete fabrication?
Total fabrication.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this documentary, which is streaming, it's about aspiring master sommeliers. A master sommelier. The sommelier is the guy in the restaurant that comes up to you and says, I can help with the wine list, sir. I can make a selection. I'll open your wine for you. I'll pour it for you. Master sommelier, it's very, very hard to become one. You have to pass a rigorous exam. It covers everything from wine, of course, to spirits, to cigars. There's a service portion of it. And there's been less than 200 ever in the history of the sommeliers, which is very, very hard to do. So this is about, I guess, four or five.
Four dudes,
more or less.
One guy I really liked. The others I could have left behind.
One guy did remind me a little bit of you.
He was cool. I like that.
If you straightened out your act and wanted to get into master sommelier,
I would straighten out my act.
If you straightened
out your act. Yes, this wine tastes it's a little citrus. I taste some fungal from foot.
Freshly cut garden hose.
Tears from a peasant. Definitely tears of a peasant. I can taste that in there.
This is from the San Francisco region. I'll say it's from Lombard Street, 4876 Lombard.
It was
so specific how they get down to where the wine's from. The region, the street, the house number. There was a very cool part in there for me personally. Christy and I watched it together. We liked it very much, by the way. Remember the service portion where they trained for the service part? They were like hazing the guy. Remember the wine's not cold enough.
Yeah.
That was actually a mock-up. That wasn't a real restaurant. That was a mock restaurant. And it was actually at the place where Christy and I got married.
Oh, really?
It was actually in the room where my groomsman and I like hung out for an hour.
Makes perfect sense, yeah.
Yeah, they turned that room into a little fake restaurant.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And that guy was acting like a belligerent asshole.
He was
customer.
Acting like an asshole, like needlessly so.
Do you think that they shot that like a week after your wedding and he was just channeling
you? He might have been
there
at the same time.
Channeling
How dare you?
God, he's like, I saw this groom last week who was acting like this.
How dare you? I really enjoyed this very much. I thought it was very interesting. And the characters, it was diverse enough, the types of characters. I enjoyed following their stories. And
it's one of those movies. It's not like a fantastically made documentary where it's filled with style and amazing edits or anything like that. However, it is very informative and you learn a lot.
It feels like an excellent reality show.
Right. And it's impressive, not in the sense of the filmmaking aspect of it, but the actual subject matter is very impressive and how good these guys' palates have to be.
Yeah. And it's funny because a lot of people, myself included.
Some good twists and turns, too.
Yeah. Definitely people you expect to do certain things.
All right. Twists and turns. Leave it with that.
Anderson, you literally gave away the ending of Lone Survivor, and all I said was people who don't do things
Wait,
do things.
I did not give away the name of the fucking movie, Lone Survivor.
What if it's not him? What if it's an Afghani? What if it's a goat?
Did I mention? I did, but I think I glossed over it. Ben Foster's death scene was almost worth the price of admission. It was really, really interesting. Well done.
You briefly mentioned it.
It was really good.
Nice.
Not since The Counselor had I seen such an interesting.
Should I see The Counselor?
No. Safe.
Save for never?
Save. Just save. Just
oh,
save.
No. Okay. Good to know. Yeah, the one thing I would say about Somme is that, you know, I felt the same way I think a lot of people do when I first got into sort of wine and stuff, which is, really, can you really tell that much about the wine? You know, the hints of this and the undernotes of that and the blah. You really can if you're trained, like these master sommeliers, you really can train your tongue.
Don't you think you could do that, though, like someone's pillow, too? You know what I mean?
Well, I think you have to smell a lot of pillows is my point.
Right.
Yeah,
so the whole point is, like,
pillows.
I would like to spend a lot of time drinking booze. Let's come up with an excuse as to why I'm allowed to do that.
These guys are going to get paid for it someday.
You know what? I really liked Somme of It. And Somme of It, I didn't. You like that? I wish I didn't say that.
A movie I saw that I did not like.
Lego movie?
No, I have not seen that.
Everything is awesome!
I saw a movie called The To-Do List. The To-Do List. From 2013.
Brian, why do you heed my warnings? Why do you just gloss over? I fucking flick fast it!
Well, let's talk about it.
Sounds good. Move on.
It's not a good film. Written and directed by Maggie Carey, starring Aubrey Plaza, Johnny Simmons, Bill Hader, who is Maggie Carey's husband. So many problems.
I like the idea of the movie being around a girl trying to blossom and find her sexuality.
Yes,
that was interesting.
That's exactly what I said. The concept of the movie is strong.
It was like they did it through the guise of a 15-year-old boy's mind. It was just so childish throughout.
So the girl, the Aubrey Plaza, okay. The fucking age thing. I realize I've lost this battle. I realize I've lost this war. Can we at least make a caveat that if you're going to play a fucking high school teenager, can you at least be closer to 18 than you are to 35?
She looks who?
She's fucking 27 years old in this movie.
All right, she looks like she could be young.
Fuck, man.
If she was at my camp, I wouldn't be like, you're way too old to be a camper. I'd ask her why her eyes are big.
Aubrey Plaza plays a high school senior.
That was part of the disease.
Yeah.
My cancer camp, I bet. Is that what happens? Was chemo
bulge,
made your eyes
bulge,
like that?
Your edema, your brain swells.
What if I have to meet her one day and she knows that I said mean things? That'd be really awful.
She has no idea who you are.
I hope never. I hope never.
She plays a teenager who is sexually inexperienced and decides I must get experience before I go to college
if you got
and makes
thing
a
for
list
her.
Of things to do sexually.
If you got a thing for her, this is a movie for you.
It's been a PG-13 kind of way, yeah.
What?
She's in a bathing
suit.
This is all... Oh,
maybe I saw
no,
a different cut.
No boob,
she's
though.
Beating off in this movie.
There's no boob, though.
Okay, yeah, but her hands are down. There's some
you're right.
Extreme digital penetration.
So this is, for some reason, this is set in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That never comes into play in the story.
It was like a Trapper Keeper or something.
That never comes into play in the actual plot of the film. Mm-hmm. There's accoutrement.
It's because it's obviously based on somebody's actual experience, whoever wrote it.
Totally unnecessary. Yeah. And... Uh-huh. It actually hurts the film because why would they set this in the midst of the AIDS crisis?
That's a good point.
That's a horrible decision.
I didn't even think about that.
I'm sitting here watching this like Magic Johnson was just diagnosed with HIV. I was a kid in 1993, like her. I was terrified. I wasn't having sex for quite some time, but I was terrified of the whole idea.
What's an example? You saw much more recently than I did. But she doesn't know what like a rim job is.
Oh, yeah.
This is a prime example of the comedy you'll get if you watch the to-do list. Yeah. Like rim job, and then she has it on her check list, mm-hmm. right? And what was it?
With a nice little box next to it for checking.
Yeah, and then what was the joke there? It was like, what's that? I don't know what that is, but it sounds musical. Sounds fun.
Wow, what was the joke?
It was something really stupid.
We learned about that at home ec or something like that. It was...
Throughout, I mean, all the check that her sexual checklist is just... She doesn't know what they mean.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what they are. But then she adapts quite quickly and becomes hoary almost instantly.
Here's another problem.
Don't like.
At one point early in the film, a bunch of the high school seniors in 1993 mm-hmm. get together and the guy's playing on the guitar, pour some sugar on me, and everyone's loving it, and they're all having a good time. Let me tell you something. As a huge dork in 1993, I was the only one
oh, Christ.
Enjoying Def Leppard on a legitimate basis.
Okay.
No one was singing, let alone enjoying Pour Some Sugar on Me, mm-hmm. except for me, that's Balding Brian, in 1993. No one, Delver was very, this is the height of grunge, Anderson.
Working at Round Table at the time. I was
no, you're not.
Bussing tables, yes. It was 1989, actually,
okay.
When that song
93,
came out.
Yeah, that's two years after it came out.
I was bussing. I was
by 93, out.
We had a jukebox, and I would, every night after we closed, I would light up a smoke, because you're allowed to smoke. I remember I was like 13 or 14, I'd light up smokes. And smoke cigarettes on my breaks and drink coffee like, it's a hard day's work. And I would bust tables after we were closed down, and I'd pump that song, pour some sugar on me, and they can't wait to go do some blow.
And now, 2012, how old are you?
I didn't even know it was about blow then.
Now,
I'm just saying that to
2012, Def Leppard's making an ironic comeback, but back then, an anachronism.
Quick aside, years ago on Loveline, the one-armed drummer of Def Leppard came by Loveline. Just to watch. He wasn't even a guest on the show.
Nice.
Very odd dude. I'm out front smoking. on a break, he's out there doing a mantra with his little rosary beads.
Really?
Yes. Very odd dude.
Okay.
Didn't like it.
Finally.
Liked it a little more than To-Do List, though.
I enjoyed his mantra.
Watching the one-armed drummer rock back and forth his mantra. More entertaining than the To-Do List.
I promised Christy I wouldn't post this on Anderson & Bryan.
So you're just going to show me?
I'm going to show you.
This is
an audio
podcast.
This is Christy watching the movie. Describe the picture.
She looks disturbed, unhappy, upset, and she's wearing a striped shirt. Does that matter?
What is her face saying to you?
Her face, she looks like she's disturbed. She could be watching Serbian film right there.
She looks horrified.
Yeah, she looks horrified.
I think that was the poop eating scene.
Yeah, there's some really gross stuff.
There's a scene where Aubrey Plaza chows down on a log of shit.
What was the point of that again? She didn't know. Oh, yeah, because it was a takeoff on the Caddyshack.
I get it, guys. Meatballs. Look, it's a candy bar.
Caddyshack.
Chomp.
Brian, how dare you? Caddyshack. Oh, yeah, baby Ruth. Yeah.
Sorry, buddy. Anyway.
It's a baby Ruth.
Bill Murray. Yeah, it's a baby Ruth. She goes, look, guys. Chomp. Yeah. Shit-eating scene.
I saw a screening of this movie, so I was like with all the fucking execs watching it, and it was really uncomfortable.
Poor Christy.
If you could hear my lack of laughter, it would have been ear-piercing. You know what I mean? It would have been the loudest lack of laughter. I just, silence as can be.
Yeah. Inverse noise. Okay. Finally, a film I liked very much.
It was like a vacuum on my seat.
Everyone laughed and it came into you. It collapsed in you.
People were laughing. There was a lot of laughter in my audience, but that's because it was the fucking people that made it and the people.
Second
that,
fans.
The publicists.
On the payroll.
Wasn't it great?
No. Finally, a movie I liked very much. In fact, you could even say it was spectacular.
Jesus Christ.
Spectacular Now!
Oh!
Yeah!
Yeah, finally.
Spectacular Now came out last year, directed by James Ponsoldt, and starring Miles Teller.
He's the
Shailene Woodley, adorable Shailene Woodley, Brie Larson, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Ramona Flowers, Logan, Bob Odenkirk, and of course, Kyle Chandler, who is fantastic in this movie. I loved Kyle Chandler playing against type. Normally, he's very buttoned down. He's very together, very clean cut.
Which one is he?
He's the disheveled dad. He's the dad that go to see. The disheveled loser.
Right.
Which you don't see from Kyle Chandler too often. No. I liked it very much. Yeah. He was in the aforementioned Zero Dark Thirty, very buttoned up, you know, the office guy. It's kind of his type. It's a coming-of-age movie, really, really sweet, really good.
Defending this movie with a listener on my email just last week.
What's to defend?
He was saying that he thought that the lead character was kind of an asshole and they didn't care for him.
That was his arc. He was an asshole.
I think he was an alcoholic.
He was?
Yeah.
He's an asshole.
Yeah.
Drank and drive all the time, put his girlfriend at risk.
Mm-hmm. She was so adorable. The one problem that I had with this movie is she was supposed to play like some unattractive little dorky, like no one really noticed her, and she was adorable.
Well, hold on. In the canon of girls that are foisted upon you, in the Alison Breeze of the world, the girls that are foisted upon you in film as this is the typical girl, when in fact they're fucking supermodels and actresses, she looked very ordinary by comparison.
So I'm on the Hollywood scale, I guess that the character that she's playing would be like in a Hollywood movie kind of background talent type thing.
But she pulled it off, man. She was great. I loved Shailene Woodley.
She's Descendants.
Yes, she was.
She was the one that you were making inappropriate comments a year ago when you saw Descendants. Yeah, and you said you were really worried because you thought she might be actually 16 as an actor, and you had to look into that afterwards because you were looking at her in a lascivious manner, and you found out that she was 18, and you were quite relieved. You and your little peen.
My brow was like,
"Oh, I thought about you the other day. I was driving my buddy's car.
You just mentioned my penis.
I know. Watch this.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I was driving my buddy's car, and he had XM radio, but it's XM radio is the worst. We need to get on there. But it is awful.
Nothing encapsulates Anderson more than that last statement.
But, okay, here's
the
deal.
I hate it so much, we got to do it.
Here's the deal. I'm like, oh, sweet, a little Stern. I miss Stern. I haven't heard Stern in years because I banned him when he went over to XM and sold us all out, and now we can't listen to him unless we pay some fucking guy in the sky a bunch of money.
True.
So, that Howard 101, gone. That, not, you got to pay an extra amount for that.
Really?
Yeah. So the stations that they have, you still got to pay for, and they got advertisement all over it.
They do, don't they?
Comedy Central has a station on there, and they do this thing, and I listened to it when I went on my Death Valley trip with Carano a few months ago, and we both agree it's awful. They treat comedy, stand-up comedy, like songs, so they'll take like a bit, like a five-minute bit or a three-minute bit from one comedian, and then he'll like hit the punchline or whatever, and then they'll
cut out.
Do a little like some imaging, and then they go to a sweeper, and then they'll go to another comedian, and they don't let you
There's
know
no
the
continuity.
Comedian. No. The stand-up comedy is so great, but you got to get a feel for the rhythm,
you gotta
and you
got to
trust
in.
It. Yeah, there's no settling in. So most of the time, it's just like, this is awful. However, And they don't ever tell you who you're listening to. So I had no idea who told this lovely, fantastic joke. And I'm sure many of you will tweet me and then email me who it is because you'll know it. And I'm burning it for somebody at the sake of for comedy for our listeners because I thought of you when I heard it and it was hilarious.
What was it?
He was talking about how he walked in. I think it might have been his dad. He walked in on his dad beating off. His dad was completely, totally bald. And he said it was the strangest thing because he was like looking over his dad's shoulder. And he walked in and it looked like he was he was having a struggle with like a miniature version of himself, like his inner child. Child and him were struggling because he was. Such a clever joke because when you beat off, I bet it looks like you're choking like a tiny little version of yourself.
Oh, especially when I put glasses on my dick. Especially. You know the only one who that works for, not the glasses on the dick, but the jokes being cut up like that, is Mitch Hedberg. And maybe Stephen Wright to an extent because they have the one-off jokes that sort of stand alone.
Bill Burr.
Bill Burr's joke, like, it's a routine and it sort of builds.
Oh, you know what? Jim Jefferies, because he tells stories.
That's why I'm saying they don't work.
No, that works just fine if you can tell a story.
Okay. Yeah, 5 minutes. You're okay.
I don't like the punchline jokes.
Okay. Oh, well, there you go.
Don't punchline jokes.
Oh, there's a way to shit on Mitch Hedberg.
Well, you know, he's dead, so he's not going to hear this.
That's a good point. Well, unless he's in heaven, he gets... iTunes.
Like you're wrestling with a miniature version of yourself.
It's good.
All right. After we just talked a bunch of shit about the to-do list and how sophomoric it is, and then, Jesus, we've been quite sophomoric this first segment.
Spectacular. Let me wrap this up. Don't go into it expecting too much. It's a subtle movie. It's going to sneak up on you, even more subtle, I think, than Say Anything, which it gets compared to a lot. So I think if people are expecting to be bowled over by this movie, it's not going to happen. Love the ambiguous ending, by the way. The ending that was very...
Brian.
What?
Can we talk about a movie without mentioning the ending ever?
God, possible? Anderson, we're a fucking movie show, and I talked about it in the most generic term possible.
No, now people know that it's not going to have a tight bowed ribbon ending with a bow on it.
No, there's nothing new about that.
I thought it was fantastic. It's the first time I've ever seen like a teenage alcoholism dealt with in a manner that wasn't like shaming or humorous. It was realistic right down the line where it wasn't an after school special. It was just what it was. Yeah. It was great. And I really cared for both characters, especially her. I thought he was fantastic. He was great. It's just a really solid movie to the point that I went out and I sent away for the director's first film, which is called Off the Black. And I actually flickfested that a few weeks ago, the Nick Nolte movie. Very good.
Was it any good?
Very good, yes.
Did you see Smashed? His second movie. He has a movie between those two.
No, I haven't seen Smashed.
Is that the one with Aaron Paul?
It's the one. Yes, it is with Aaron Paul.
I saw that one.
With,
it's all right. It's pretty good.
Hmm.
Little, you know, little dry, but I thought it was decent.
Everything is awesome!
Who was the girl in it?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Oh, she in that too?
Yeah, she's the main character.
There you go. Coming up next, we're counting down the top five. Good performances.
Good performances, bad movies.
Next. Happy Valentine's Day, Anderson.
What?
It's Valentine's Day. That's the day this episode comes out.
Oh, that's true.
And we're not the only ones celebrating. A couple guys on, maybe ladies. Some people on...
I know some people are listening to this right now going, oh, shit, it's Valentine's Day.
No!
Got you covered. Pop this onto the car with it.
Yeah, take care of everything.
Be like, here you go, honey. You know what? Fuck flowers. Who wants to do that?
You're in love.
Here's a little film vault for you.
Yeah, you're in luck and you're in love. A couple people got some interesting things Valentine's Day related. Someone got a 14-karat white gold princess cut sapphire ring. So that was a kind purchase to make through us. We appreciate it. Good luck giving that to your sweetie.
That was very fancy.
Yeah, and someone got someone has a different attitude towards Valentine's Day. They got a paper card, a greeting card that says, Happy fucking Valentine's Day. So enjoy that one. Enjoy giving that one. Maybe the same guy got the sapphire ring and the happy falling of Valentine's Day card.
I have doubts about
it. It's unlikely.
That.
Time to go over the interesting and notable purchases on the old Amazon.com click through on AndersonandBrian.com. Of course, once again, it is a very popular item on our site. People getting the back-to-back world champs, America! Getting the koozies and the t-shirts. People are starting to spread out in different algorithms.
I think anyone's doubling up.
What do you mean? Again, the koozie?
While wearing the shirt? Yeah.
I would.
Can you imagine this summer how many of those are going to be out there?
Because
I would probably, and I probably will buy one, but not till summer.
Sure. Well, enjoy those, Patriots. Somebody got Beats by Dre in-ear earbud headphones, the ones that go inside your ear. Someone got a Google Nexus 10 tablet.
Do me a favor, though. If you have one of those shirts, don't wear it in China or North Korea. Don't, like, challenge them.
Yeah, because they don't get the irony.
Well, they're going to be like, yeah, you know what? We should win a championship.
How many people are buying these? Are buying them, like, genuinely?
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, I got to show my Merc pride.
All the people that love you and your racism, the types that would buy that unironically and think it's hilarious and true. Not even funny. There's nothing funny about it. It's just fact statement.
Wait,
America!
Wait, black people can buy
America!
This. Black people can buy the back-to-back world champs thing. They just have to borrow a white person's credit card. Someone got a Roku. Logan, don't laugh at that. Someone got a Roku. Someone got a Samsung 40-inch television. What?
Look how pleased you are with yourself.
It's not funny. Someone got a Noxzema Eyebrow Shaper 3-pack, but they got a whole bunch of them, so enjoy getting your eyebrow shaped.
Wait, are we allowed to do that because Obama's a president? Is that why?
Yeah. We tilted in the other direction. Someone got a, what does it say? Oh, you should get this for you. This would be a nice present for your wife, Anderson. She probably doesn't cook now. But in the kitchen, there's a, you can get a foam mat. The Kitchen Chef foam mat. It's so nice for your feet when you're standing and chopping.
Ooh, I would like that. I would like that for myself.
You know who likes it better than humans? Dogs. Charlie loves the mat.
I have those.
It's Charlie's mat now.
I have two in the bathroom, one on the other side of my bed. Yep. Constantly walking on foam. Yep. I don't like it.
Someone got an 8-piece Ginsu knife.
Like
set.
A little boy's ass.
Are they Ginsu knives or Ginsu knives? They're Ginsu, right?
They're Ginsu.
Yeah. Someone got an Indiana Jones framed photo collage. Somebody got a, what is this? Power Director 12. Oh, that's software. Power Director 12. It's editing software. A leather checkbook cover, an Oakland A's family decal set. And a 2 Rawlings official Major League Baseball. Good for, spring training time's coming up. That's good for autographs.
It's well done, bro.
Movie time.
Hey, you hit your post there.
Hit the post.
Well done. Here we go. Here are the movies that were bought last time. Since the last time we all hung out. Maybe in America. Talking about Captain Phillips there. Which Logie was pleasantly surprised. Because I guess that I said bad things about that movie. And here's the deal. Not a bad movie. A couple really absurdly ridiculous scenes like the movie to medical. But the movie I hijacked and ruined it for me. So that's the problem. Doubt. In a World was bought. HD version. Smart. Annie Hall.
You and I only like it because it's about sound engineers.
Yeah, that's why. Sound engineers is the only common thread that we have with that movie that we like. Boogie Nights was bought. Did I say Annie Hall? Coming to America. Defending Your Life. Despicable Me Too.
There it is.
Gangs of New York, Goodfellas, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, Smart, Magnolia.
Hey, I have it right here next to me.
Enjoy the third act. Enjoy this. RoboCop, no idea which one, but RoboCop was Singing in the Rain, 60th anniversary. You know what? Not a bad movie. I enjoyed that Singing in the Rain. I enjoyed that movie. Singing in the Rain. The Amazing Spider-Man was bought. Godfather Collection, the Coppola Restoration. Maybe he restored the shittiness out of the third one. Yeah. There Will Be Blood was bought. Blu-ray. Smart.
What if he restored the third one to back to its unmade form, script form? I restored it back to script.
It's just an empty slot. Yeah. Unbreakable was bought. Do we need to talk about Kevin? We need to talk about Kevin.
Depressing.
And Windy City Heat.
There you go.
Which I still need to watch the very end. I fell asleep. Five minutes left.
Thank you, everybody, for
the
your
best
purchase.
Part of the movie. I fell asleep.
Appreciate you clicking through. Continue support. And now back to the show. Hi, this is Lego Batman, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Welcome back. Let me just retrieve my sheet here from underneath my book, which has not been taken from my possession. Thank you to Dead Cat Hat. Dead Cat Hat from Benicia, California. Benicia, Bay Area. Station Change is the name of the album. DeadCatHat.com is where you go for more Dead Cat Hat. Thanks, guys. Put it back on top of my book to hide it from my sight.
What? Hey, you want to hide something from me? Put it inside your book and then give me your book. I'll never see it.
Wow.
I'll never ever see whatever it is.
This is your emotional manipulation coming into play. You just love to have the upper hand. You begged me for the book, and then
as soon as I bring it in, I never begged.
You harangued.
I said I'll read your little book.
Yeah,
bring me your little book.
So where's my copy? And I said, do you even want to read it?
No, I was a little offended that a lady I work with named Ann has a copy.
Mailed to her directly from the publisher.
How dumb is your publisher?
What do you mean?
I mean, where is it going to get more play? Sitting in Ann's mailbox for all of time, never opened, or in your co-host's lap,
they have endless copies. I have a limited supply, and I brought one.
It was very offensive, too, when I opened the front cover, and it said, to my sidekick, best wishes, Brian.
If it's supposed to be a surprise, leave something for the reader.
Brian, listen, if you can give me that book, I promise you I'll read it by summer.
Just exactly what I want.
Can I have it?
You need to read it faster than that.
My dogs keep pooping in the backyard. I got to pick it up.
Come on.
Well, something. Can't okay, let's go.
Can't have that.
Let's do this.
Let's talk about the top five good performances in bad movies.
All right.
So many, Anderson, that I came up with.
Okay, great.
So many.
Fantastic.
Had to whittle it down to five.
Uh-huh.
You want to go first or should I?
You go ahead. Okay. Because I got a couple doozies at the top there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Can't wait for doozies. Number five. Mm-hmm. There's a movie. It's very, very bad. It's also directed by a director who makes bad movies. The director of Problem Child, Beverly Hills Ninja, Big Daddy, The Benchwarmers. I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
You're naming all my favorite
films. Mess with the Zohan. Grown-ups too. Just go with it.
Wait a minute. I don't think I've seen any of these movies.
I'm talking about Dennis Dugan, who is on my top five list of directors, movies you love by directors you hate, because he directed Happy Gilmore. But he also directed the previous list of shitty movies, and along with number five for me, Saving Silverman. However, there is a good performance in Saving Silverman. You ever seen Saving Silverman? You ever seen it?
Steve Zahn.
Oh, no. He's fine or whatever, but the part is stupid.
Yeah, I saw it. It's the entire gag that they sold the movie and center of the movie around was Steve Zahn getting attacked by a raccoon. You know, it's always bad times if your movie is centered around some kind of wild feral animal attack. And there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah, it's true. No, but number five, though, is actually R. Lee Ermey. Remember him from this movie? No. Remember R. Lee in this movie? No.
That's another thing. It's like these movies, I don't remember them.
This is the only thing I remember about this movie. I went online and looked at a couple clips like, oh, yeah, they were in a Neil Diamond band. And, oh, yeah, he was marrying Amanda Peet. Like, I forgot a lot about this movie. Oh, yeah, I fucking forgot Jack Black was in it. He's the co-star of the film. And all I remember is how fucking funny R. Lee Ermey was as their high school football coach who goes to jail for stabbing a referee with one of the yard markers, you know, the flags they mark first down mm-hmm. with. He ran a referee through the heart and killed him. He goes to jail. And when he goes to jail, in the meantime, he's been there for many, many years, obviously. He murdered a man. He's there for many years. And Jack Black and Steve Zahn go to visit him because they need advice on how to prevent Silverman, played by Jason Biggs, from marrying a girl they don't like. And they ask him this.
So what brings you boys up here today?
Well, Coach, we need your advice.
Okay, shoot.
Darren fell in love with this girl, Judith, and we kidnapped her.
Kill her.
Okay, just wait a minute, let me finish. So, we screwed up, because now she knows who we are. So we can't let her go, or she'll turn us in.
Is that it? Is that everything?
Yeah.
Kill her!
It's the breath of fresh air in an otherwise very dull movie. And, of course, he ends up masterminding the kidnap plot. And at one point, he takes a dump on their lawn because it's like we're on stakeout. And he's like, all of a sudden, just drops his drawers and starts pooping on their lawn.
I do remember that.
It's such a bizarre character. And what's otherwise a very dumb movie, a very forgettable movie.
Just for
the
record, I thought Steve Zahn was funny in that last clip. Wait, hold on. We're not done yet. Steve Zahn is fucking hilarious. I love that kid.
Steve Zahn is pretty funny, but in this movie, he's not one of his better performances.
I mean, Steve Zahn, TV actor now.
No, what show?
New CBS show, or ABC show, Mind Games.
Oh, good for him. Good for him.
Well, Arlie Ermey, number five for me in Saving Silverman.
I interviewed Steve Zahn years and years ago, and he was very bitter, man.
Really? About what?
Because he didn't really get, he wasn't getting the
He was getting
roles.
Typecast for sure.
Yeah, and he didn't want to be, and I fell for the guy. He never really got a lead, you know? Like happy Texas is the closest he ever got.
You know where? Yeah, you're right. And you know where he was really good, not playing a dummy, like he was just playing a normal guy. Was in the movie I made you watch, Shattered Glass.
Yeah, he was great in that.
He was fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he's in Rescue Dawn, right?
Yes, he's fantastic in that as well. Brian, you want to talk about his ending in that movie? Or are you going to be okay?
Never saw Rescue Dawn.
Oh, what? God damn it! All right, here we go. Number five. Moving on. Movie that just came out this year.
I would talk about it.
First of all, go heavy on the '90s tonight. Today. On this episode. First off, going very recent, which I don't like to do, but I mentioned it when I flicked Fest, The Counselor, my least favorite movie of last year. It was Ridley Scott, Cormac McCarthy's first screenplay. A few screenplays have been adapted from his books, but this is the first one. Cormac McCarthy, guy that wrote The Road, as well as, what's the other one?
No Country for Old Men,
of course. And this is the first time they actually let the guy write the entire screenplay. And Ridley Scott,
directed.
Miscalculations left and right, back and forth. Huge cast. We had Cameron Diaz, Penelope Cruz, Javier Bardem. I wrote terrible things about this. Brad Pitt on my website over there, AndersonCowan.com. Rosie Perez is in this thing. And one of my main points that I also made here on this here program is that I really, honestly did feel bad for poor Michael Fassbender, who was
phenomenal in this movie. He was great. He was probably, if the movie, it's a 5.3 on IMDb, and I think it actually climbed up to like a 34% on something in the 30s on Rotten Tomatoes, but for a while there, it was like in the teens, I think. Just not a good movie at all.
Oh, dear.
Just blow hard.
Ugh. How does a good director lose his way that badly?
You can do that. You can do, especially if you're not familiar with the material, and you think that the guy who wrote it is, and you think it's reading differently, and you get kind of like swept away with the actors, and or you just let them do their thing, and you don't really.
Not since. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, if you really trust the actors and you have a huge cast, and if you're not that, I hate to say it, but that invested in the material, which Ridley may not have been, plus. You know, I don't want to speculate, but I think that he might have been doing some of this stuff while Tony.
Oh, interesting.
During the whole Tony thing with his brother
dying.
Yeah,
I didn't think about that, actually.
And maybe he wasn't paying attention. And it felt rudderless throughout.
Not since The Terminal have I been this shocked at how bad a movie has been.
You haven't seen it.
No, but the 34% and the teens thing.
This is your number one anticipated.
It really
and
was.
Why don't you go out and see it and try and defend it? That's what you should be doing.
With The Terminal with Spielberg and Tom Hanks and a great story, I was like, oh, this can't miss. And, of course, it missed horribly.
I never saw The Terminal.
You might have. No, you're
not. No,
I will never make you watch
Thank
that
you.
Movie.
I appreciate
it's an awful,
it.
Awful film.
Appreciate that.
And this sounds a lot like the same type of thing.
But
the pieces are all there.
Fassbender, though, gives like a gut-wrenching performance. I mean, this guy just pulled himself he doesn't know how not to give it his all, but this character in particular is going through hell throughout the movie and sobbing and crying. You just feel bad for him because he's just surrounded by such shit, and it just doesn't matter. No matter how good he was, he wasn't going to pull any feelings out of me because I gave up halfway through.
Didn't care what was going on.
Less than halfway through.
Story.
Yeah. So The Counselor, last year's The Counselor. Poor Mikey Fassbender.
Okay. Number four for me.
Who has become one of my favorite actors. I love that guy. Michael Fassbender. Fantastic actor.
There was a movie 2 or 3 years ago.
Especially in The Counselor.
Another one, actually, where you could look at the parts and be like, how come this wasn't as good as... although there's one obvious part that let us all down. I'm talking about a movie called Young Adult. I was very excited for, directed by Jason Reitman, written by Diablo Cody.
Why would you be excited about this movie?
Jason Reitman had a
you
good
just said two
record.
Names that should be banned.
No, Jason Reitman has a good track record.
Jason Reitman's my least favorite person working in Hollywood. I hate him.
Although Labor Day looks pretty rough.
He's what has he made that's good? Tell me, one good thing.
I liked Up in the Air. Thank You for Smoking.
Thank You for Smoking was shite! And Up in the Air was, you know why people loved Up in the Air?
Juno was good.
I will stab you with a pen. Take off your glasses. I don't want to harm your glasses. They look expensive, but I would like to stab you in the eye with a pen.
No,
listen to me. Up in the Air, the last, the monologue at the end, not to do your style and talk about the end of a movie,
no, but
the monologue was so strong. George Clooney's monologue
great
was
Anderson,
so strong.
Great, now everyone knows there's a monologue at the end of the movie.
It was such a, that people left the theater thinking, wow, it's a great movie. Without that monologue, that movie is okay. I hate Thank You for Smoking. I hate it.
Really?
Hate.
There's some good stuff in there.
No. I was excited when it came out, too.
Because you like to smoke. You thought it was about smoking. You thought it was like a pro-smoking thing.
I was really disappointed that they did the switcheroo.
They're giving out cigarettes.
Exact 180 of what I was anticipating.
Anyway, back to my
I thought
four.
They let me smoke in the theater. I was shocked.
Number four is Young Adult, but the stand-up performance in Young Adult is young Patton Oswalt. Coming into his own as an actor.
Young?
Well, you know what I'm saying. Young in terms
this
of
movie. This came out like 2 years ago.
Movie experience.
What are you talking about?
What? With Big Fan and with this? I mean, coming from the world of stand-up comedy and now breaking into...
He was in Magnolia.
You know, very small part.
He was high in the sky.
He was, and then he wasn't.
Yeah.
Anyway, Patton Oswalt in Young Adult was fantastic. The movie was not... I really liked him. I loved him in Big Fan, too. A better movie, I think. But Young Adult, a disappointing film, but Patton Oswalt, fantastic.
Big Fan, a little too depressing for my taste.
Young Adult, pretty depressing. A character study that goes nowhere.
It's depressing that I have a co-host that would watch that and talk about it at length.
You've seen it before, though, right?
Young Adult?
Did you not see it?
Banned!
Oh, you never saw it?
Fuck Cody! Fuck Diablo Cody! Are you kidding me?
But you should see it to have an opinion on
it. I will never, ever watch that movie, ever!
There's a good performance in there by Patton Oswalt.
I'll tell you this right now, Brian. You assigned me that movie, and all bets are off. I just won't come in. I will never watch that fucking movie.
Ooh, that's all it takes? Go see Young Adult.
I will never, ever see that fucking movie.
Anderson.
Those people are banned. All right, number four.
There's
for
a good
me.
Performance in there.
1998 film, Bri. 5.2, it doesn't matter. 13% on Rotten Tomatoes, 5.2 on the old IMDb there.
IMDb.
IMDb. We've got to talk about Jessica Lange here. Jessica Lange is a fantastic actress to the point that she is in a little series that people like to love called American Horror Story. Ever heard of American Horror Story?
I have. I don't watch it, but I've heard of it.
All right. I've seen the first two seasons now. Wife and I would have not watched the entire second season because we had such a hard time getting past American Horror Story Asylum. It's so over-stylized that it was ridiculous. Mm. But she was so good and compelling that we continued to watch just for her, and then we kind of acquiesced acquiesced to all of the over-stylizing, and we kind of actually became used to it.
Acquiesced, I like that.
And I actually became beholden to it, where I was looking forward to all the over. I bought in. I bought in with American Horror Story, but I would not have given it my attention if it wasn't for Jessica Lange playing the evil nun that she was in American Horror Story. And going back to 1998's Hush, a similar type of evil mother character in this really ridiculous, awful movie.
I don't think I even know Hush.
Well, Jonathan Darby directed it. I believe it was his last
John
movie.
Darby.
Last movie. A lot of these movies, too, I noticed it's kind of sad. It's like the last movie they ever directed. Like sometimes it'll be like two or three. They've made like three or four movies.
Wouldn't
five
it be
movies.
Great if it was Dennis Dugan's last movie?
No, Reitman's. It'll be better. Yeah.
We'd never have
Miss Movies is always trying to get his sister on the show. I'm like, no!
I like
Same
her.
Blood!
I like Katherine Reitman.
No, she's not
she's good in It's Always Sunny.
What is she?
Dead Tooth.
She plays a snail?
Dead Tooth.
Oh, Dead Tooth. They always have like decent looking girls on there that are supposed to be hideous.
Yeah, I know.
Like, that doesn't really work, guys. She's kind of pretty. What are you doing? The opposite. Oh, no, it's not the opposite. I was going to say the opposite. Never mind. Okay. Cut that out. All right, so Hush. It's a ridiculous story about Gwyneth Paltrow and her boyfriend or husband, Jonathan Shaich.
Okay.
And it's just convoluted. And it centers around Jessica Lange being like the evil controlling mother who's willing to do whatever it takes to keep control of her little son. And it's from New York to Kentucky. And I saw this in the theater when it came out. That's another problem with this list is like I remember the performances being really good, but I don't really remember much about the movie. You know, I read the plot, but it was just I got tired even reading about the plot. I don't care. Yes, she's evil mother. And I don't want to talk about the ending. Because in case somebody wants to check out and catch up on 1998's Hush. But I can tell you Jessica Lange plays evil very, very well and very effectively.
All right. I have no recollection of this whatsoever.
That's why this isn't a good topic.
No, I mean, it is a good topic. So Hush. We're unearthing things. We're talking about things that would otherwise never be talked about.
It's a 1998 show. American thriller starring Gwyneth Paltrow.
Number three for me.
Jessica Lange.
Lange. Number three for me. The inspiration for this list, at least for me, when I saw him in this movie.
I like Ivan Reitman. Can I say that?
See, Ivan Reitman's done more harm than good, I think.
Oh, no. I like
he did that horrible movie recently, the No Strings Attached.
That was fine.
Or was that Friends of Benefits? I think it was No Strings Attached. Mm-hmm. It was the bad one with Kelso.
Oh. Yeah, because the other one was decent.
They're both not good, but one was a little less not good than the other. Yeah, with Timberlake.
I'm Sean fucking White.
What?
Sean White was in the other one. Friends with Benefits.
Oh, yes, he was.
And he was a total asshole playing himself. That's love that. I love when that happens.
Number three. Like I said, the inspiration for my list is Jeff Bridges in R.I.P.D.
Oh, you know what? I almost had him for New Tron. Tron Legacy.
Oh, Tron Legacy?
He was great. He was great in Tron Legacy.
I never saw that.
But not good enough to make the list.
Yes, R.I.P.D., a bad movie directed by Robert Schwenke, director of Flight Plan, which you recently saw, and Red, which you have not seen, and you will see someday.
What do you mean? I saw Flight Plan in the theaters when it came out, and I flick-fest it, and then you went and saw it. What are you talking about? What's going on here?
No, I assigned you Flight Plan recently.
I'm thinking Flight.
You're thinking of Red Eye.
I'm thinking of Flight.
Oh.
Yeah, very different movie. I'm sorry. The sickness is taking hold of my brain.
Yes, it really is. It's eating your brain.
Flight Plan is that stupid movie you have to watch.
It's a good movie. With Jodie Foster?
Absurd.
You know what's a good movie which you're going to see someday? Red.
No.
Bruce
never,
Willis?
No.
It's actually a decent movie. It's actually decent. Surprising. You know what? That's a top five pleasant surprise right now.
How was the sequel?
I never saw the sequel.
We're all over the place here.
Jeff Bridges, R.I.P.D. Bad movie. Awful. CGI is terrible. Rip-off of Men in Black, but worse in every way. However, Jeff Daniels cannot act poorly in any movie, even in a bad movie like this.
He did a cowboy thing, right?
He was a lawman from the Old West, and he was fucking fantastic. Every scene he was in, every time he spoke, it was the sun poking through the clouds through a rainy day. And the rest of the movie was garbage.
Just for the record,
God, he was so good.
Brian saw the trailers for this. He saw the reaction. He saw how long it lived, how short it lived in the theaters,
yep.
Yet still sent away.
It's true.
To watch it.
True.
Why? I don't know.
I don't know
either.
There's
so many good movies out there. Why would you do that?
Well, I saw a great performance in Jeff Bridges.
Number three for me, Bri Bri. Go back.
So when he dies and we do a tribute episode, I can talk about how good he was in a bad
movie. Jeff Bridges dying?
It's going to happen someday. We're all going to die.
We're not going to be doing this show, all right?
Except for me.
Settle down.
Kimbo's going to preserve me forever.
I'm going to ban the show because Brian's going to make me watch a terrible movie, which I'm going to ban. All right, here we go. We're going back to the 80s, Bri Bri.
Yeah, let's do it.
To a movie that was very controversial at the time, not because of its subject matter, but because of its inflated budget. Talking about Ishtar.
Ooh.
Ishtar!
You know, I never saw Ishtar.
You missed nothing. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. It's stupid as fuck. But the storyline is a couple lounge singers, Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty, they want to get a lounge act going, but they're just ridiculously comically bad, like SNL bad, like the type of band that would show up on Weekend Update to do a little side project, you know what I mean? And it would just be characters doing
deserving of scorn.
But Dustin Hoffman is fucking hilarious, and he pulls it off, and he's a great performer, and Dustin Hoffman is magnetic. I mean, he's mesmerizing, which, by the way, we got to do that soon. Top five mesmerizing films.
Mesmerizing performances or films?
Films.
Okay.
Well, I got one. A couple of really good ones.
Well, how do you define mesmerizing film?
Like the kind of movies that are supposed to be kind of like stream of conscious, but that actually work. There's so many movies out there that I think are
like mind-bending
films? It's poetic. You just got to like, you know, give yourself to the film and feel it, feel the vibes. Mm-hmm. And most of them I can't stand, but there's a few that are really good.
Okay.
Get the clutch here.
Like Magnolia? Cerebral.
No, Magnolia could be considered that, yeah. Okay. It's like a poetic, help me out here, buddy. Brain.
It's a stream of consciousness.
I already said that, so you can't use that.
Tone poem.
Tone what?
The tone poem. You ever heard that?
No.
No. I don't know what you're trying to say.
Okay. I really wish I didn't ask for help. All right. Okay. Back to Ishtar.
It's absurd.
It's kind of sad, too, the story behind it, because the lady that directed it, her name was Elaine May, which no one really heard of since. Nope. Really, this was her last movie that she made. But Warren Beatty owed her because she had done like an uncredited rewrite of his Reds movie, which actually got him an Academy Award. And she always wanted to make like a road movie, like the Bing Crosby and Bob Hope style movies in the Middle East. And this is what she wrote. And it's like this lounge singer act, this duo gets sent over to Morocco to be lounge singers over there. They're terrible. Even their agents think they're awful. But then the CIA gets involved. It's so convoluted and so ridiculous. However, Dustin Hoffman's great, but don't see this movie. However, gotta kind of say however some more. Edgar Wright loves it, Scorsese loves it, and Tarantino loves it. In fact, Scorsese claims that it's one of his favorite movies ever, which I can kind of see if you ever seen After Hours. Kind of the same vibe.
In a weird, can't take your eyes off it because it's so bad kind of way?
No,
you must like it ironically.
No, maybe that's just his sense of humor, yeah, but maybe. If he had control of it, it was one of those movies from the 80s. There's so many of them that just were glossy and poorly framed, and it was supposed to be cute and funny, like hating the punchlines, just the tone and the rhythm. And
it's all off.
All just cutesy, like it's something you would see on primetime TV today, you know what I mean? Shot with three cameras.
All right.
The same kind of sensibilities. That's what it was.
Okay. Coming out next,
Ishtar. Have you heard of Ishtar?
Wow. Well, Ishtar was like a punchline.
It was
a punchline for
a long time. Yeah.
In fact, never heard of it.
The guy that writes Farside, Larson.
Yep.
He the only apology he ever wrote was to the makers of Ishtar, because apparently he had one of his cartoons, The Farside, was a video store in hell, and it was just all Ishtar.
Yeah.
And then he ended up he had not even seen the movie when he made that comic. Strip, or whatever, the single standing comic.
Panel.
And then he ended up seeing it on a plane, and he said that something very strange was happening to him. He was becoming amused throughout the movie, so he felt really bad. So he wrote an apology, and in his apology, he's like, I'm sure I owe an apology to many people, but this is the only one that I ever felt apologetic enough to write.
Wow.
Ishtar.
Coming up next.
I watched many clips, though, of Ishtar in preparation of the Super Program, and he stood up. Dustin Hoffman was great. I was laughing at his performance. Warren Beatty, not so much. He was doing very, very self-conscious. And the whole just glossy, poorly, like, overly lit.
Is Warren Beatty capable of being funny? Because I saw the Bullworth. Did not like it.
Bullworth. Hilarious.
Like,
he was great in that. I love that movie. Despite Halle Berry's involvement.
Yeah.
Very good. And
Come
she was actually hot in that movie.
Come on next.
That's weird. That's how long ago that movie was. Halle Berry was hot.
It's a while
You ever heard her talk?
Yeah, of course.
She has handled
no,
me like as herself. She's one of these ladies that's so out of touch. Like, she has handlers that tell her she's right all the time, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's really creepy to hear her talk.
Coming up next, conclusion of the list of our good performances and bad movies.
Time goes by so quickly. Looking back at all that used to haunt me.
Anderson. You were just saying before the show how much you like the fan art and how good consistently it has been.
It is very good. Very talented listeners out there.
People sending us funny, creative, insulting, comical, serious, romantic fan art.
Serious and romantic.
Serious and romantic.
Is that the name of a band from the 80s?
It should be. There is the Romantics. We appreciate the fan art, and we'd love to get some more. We use it as our artwork every week for the episode, and you can have yours and your name featured on... Oh, I should have given the fan art this week. Featured on... Oh, let me do that right now. Logan, who is the fan art this week? Steve Schreiber is right there. Thank you very much. Steve Schreiber's art is up this week, and it's excellent. I guess you can only use this read 1 week then. Well, send your fan art to Logan on the AndersonandBrian.com link that's right there on the page, and thanks in advance. Bow, bow. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks again to Deadhead Cat. Deadheadcat.com is where you go for more information on them and their album.
Wait a minute.
Station Change.
Is it Deadhead Cat? I thought it was Dead Hat Cat.
Oh, yeah. Dead Cat. Oh, yeah. I fucked that up. Dead Cat Hat.
That makes it funny. Deadhead Cat's not good. It's like a stoner cat.
Dead Cat Hat.
That's better.
Yeah. There's a dead cat that's worn as a hat.
And I stepped on the name of the album, so you go there.
Station Change. Check it out. Deadcathat.com. Station.
As far as we can tell, it's Station Change, but who knows, because Brian's the one reading it. Just renaming things as he goes.
Chemo.
Hey, I'd like to also give a quick little thank you, verbal thank you to those of you who listened that were part of the crew for the first ever Cold Cockle production short that we shot last weekend. But so many people busted their asses for the cause.
You shot a short?
I shot two shorts.
What?
Yes, we used actual equipment.
Did you pay these people?
No. I fed them. Yeah, but we shot out in like Oxnard. For those of you not in the know, it's like an hour and a half from LA. It was like about a 10-hour day. It was cold. It was raining.
Is this whole thing a scam to get people to work for free?
Yeah, because that's what I get off on, watching people work for free. I'm actually not even directing anything. There's no film in the camera. I'm just over there.
Oh, yeah.
Got my hand in my pocket going, they're all working for free.
It's working.
But I'd like to thank Joseph, a sound guy, and Julian, and Chris, and Riley, and Trevor, Evan, Diana.
Cut that
out. Even Mickey, my DP. But we shot on an actual camera, Alexa. We got a great package from Panavision. I'd like to thank all the guys over at Panavision. And hopefully, I'm not going to embarrass myself when I cut this thing together.
Can't wait to see it.
It's going to be awesome.
AndersonandBrian.com.
All my actors. George, Jacob, Caitlin, Scott. Scott Murphy was great. Of course, Robin Roth.
I didn't hear the name Logan in there.
Logan was not an actor.
Wow.
Nor is he helping with any of this.
I wasn't invited to help.
Wow.
Actually, you know what?
I didn't get the call either, Logan. I must have gotten right to voicemail.
I did. I asked,
not going to apply for your site.
I asked why you didn't apply. You know what
I've been working
was?
With you for 3 years now. You should just ask and know what I can do.
Listen to me. I asked why you didn't reply. Of course, I was joking when I said that, but you responded quite seriously. You want to be able to afford my rates. I'll never forget that.
Wow.
Cut deep.
You know, he's right.
Hurt.
Just for all you listeners out there, you have a little insight into how Anderson's mind works.
Hurt a lot.
This is the same guy who claims to have never asked for my book.
Anderson's probably the most sensitive out of the three of us.
It's absolutely true.
It's absolutely true.
What? Why am I admitting that? I'm not sensitive at all. Fuck both of you guys. Let's do this.
Number two.
Let's talk about some newborn porn because I'm not sensitive. That was one of the problems that I realized. Not a problem, really, because we got everything. God, there was so much heavy lifting, though, because we had to shoot in a park and then on a beach. And beach is like one of the worst places you ever want to shoot. Mm. It's a pain in the ass. Unless you're shooting like handheld with a little SLR or something. But we had tons of like shit that had to be lugged out there. So, but it was actually kind of cool because everyone loves movies that was out there for the most part. All of the listeners that were helping out that was part of the production team. So there was so much. Because usually if you're on set, no one's talking about movies because no one watches movies or makes movies. But all these fucks did. We were all out there talking about movies.
Movie fans.
I was like neglecting my own set talking about fucking newborn porn with my AD Evan.
Did they all find you through the film vault?
Film Vault and After Disaster, yeah. And they went over and applied.
You have firsthand feedback. What is the feedback of the Film Vault? What do people like and what people don't like?
They don't go up and ask them. What do you
They
do
must
you
have
like?
Come up at once or
no,
twice.
No, the show never really even came up.
What?
I heard somebody mumbling, thank God Brian's not here. That would have been uncomfortable because I hate him so much.
That was you.
I heard, oh, yeah, it was
you heard
me.
It in your own headphones.
No one actually talked about the show really at all. It was nice.
Oh, that was
it
nice.
Was all about the cause, Brian, the cause.
Fuck you guys. Number two for me. There's a movie. I don't know if this is bad. It's not a good movie, and it's more of a guilty pleasure. But I'm going to go ahead and mark Varsity Blues up as a not a good movie, directed by Brian Robbins. This is far and away his best film. He did Norbit. He did Meet Dave. He did 1,000 Words. Apparently, he likes working with Eddie Murphy.
I'd like to cut you off. Steve was also out there. He helped out.
Okay.
PA Steve.
Okay.
He would have been very hurt if he...
Thanks, Steve. Steve is not...
Brian is so upset right now. I don't blame him. I was rude, but I didn't want to forget Steve. I pictured Steve being very sad that he didn't get credit there.
Well, now he's getting a lot of credit.
Yeah, a lot.
He's getting the spotlight.
Go ahead, Brian. Continue to tease your movie that you haven't said yet. Here's the problem with doing
Varsity
that.
Blues.
Okay, there you go.
Has never been on a top five. I doubt it ever will be on a top five. It's not particularly interesting as a football movie. It's not outstanding, nor even as a high school movie. It's just kind of, it's a whole bunch of cliches. It's a whole bunch of melodrama and a bunch
James
of silly
Vanderbeek?
Scenes. Yeah, James Vanderbeek. It's just some fine stuff in there, but it's more
Who's the
silly
big guy?
Than anything.
Who's the big heavy guy?
He's Billy Bob. He lost a lot of weight, by the way. He lost a shitload of weight.
Type in two, T-W-O, if you would, Logan. No, not on the machine, not on your computer there.
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob, he was on Loveline once. I really liked that kid. We talked a while, and I got this drop off of him.
Get two chicks in the same bed. Do them.
You can't, because I took you out, because you
nice.
Can't stand music.
Oh, I heard two chicks in the same bed.
Get two chicks in the same bed.
Nice.
Do them. That's a drop I used quite a bit.
I like that.
Nice kid. I invited him up to my camp, and he said 9 days. There's no way I could do 9 days with kids with cancer. So I kind Ooh. Of thought less of him after that.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, he's honest, at least.
But this movie, Varsity Blues... For those of you who might not remember, was huge controversy at the time.
Yeah.
Because one of the scenes they had, right. It's a Disney film, and one of the scenes they had was that dumbfuck football players as part of an initiation or a rush
no,
or something.
No, it's a different movie.
Were laying down in
no.
the middle of the street.
That is The Program with James Caan
laying
and
down.
Craig Schaefer.
Laying down
we're leaving that in, by the way.
Laying down,
that was a bit controversy, though.
Are you sure it's The Program?
You're asking, are you sure you want to ask me?
Why wouldn't I want to ask you?
Because I know everything.
What?
Especially about movies, especially about football, especially about football movies.
What's going on? What's happening right now?
He was trying to show how cool he was.
Okay. Yeah. And then some kids went out and did it, like opening weekend. Sure. They're like, let's try that. We'll lay down on the lines in the street, and cars will drive by on either side of us, and it'll be great. And it'll be like the movie, and then they got run over and killed.
It was Craig Schaefer. I was in high school. This came out when I was in college, so I remember.
It was Craig Schaefer,
and he was a 5'5" Heisman Trophy eligible quarterback.
In the movie?
In the movie. He was a very small man. He dated Kelly Lynch. No.
So they cut it out.
Who was the one in Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I don't know things. I know nothing.
Fuck.
Opposite of you. You know everything. I know nothing. Listen, they cut it out of the movie, right?
Kelly something.
Never to be seen again.
They did cut it out.
Kelly Slater. He's a very good surfer.
That's right. They cut it out of the film.
Never to be
seen again. But I even named my actor who it is.
Okay.
The actor who is great in Varsity Blues, not The Program. Varsity Blues.
Yeah, you haven't even named it.
His name is Joe Pickler, and you would know him as Kyle Moxon. Mox's younger brother, his 8-year-old brother, is so fucking fantastic. Every time this is on TV, I'm like, Varsity Blues, and then I start to watch a little bit of it or whatever it's on in the background. I'm reminded how fucking great this little kid is in this movie. This is the one I was talking about earlier, where it's a throwaway character. You could easily have done this movie and not even had him in it, yet... His inclusion is so fucking funny and so interesting. He's straight out of another movie. He's like a much better movie, by the way. He reminds me of Manny on Modern Family. He's sophisticated. He's intelligent beyond his years. He's really into religion. I looked all up and down for a video clip, but I couldn't find it. But here's an exchange. So Vanderbeek says to him, "He's Vanderbeek is. You remember the scene with the bikini, the whipped cream bikini, Valley Larder?
Yes.
You're familiar with it." James Vanderbeek trying to psych himself up to go over there and bang Allie Larder. He's like, all right, I'm going to do this. And he says to himself, he says, I'm 18 years old. I'm going to do a shitty accent. I'm 18 years old. It's not like I'm married to her. She invited me over. I'm just being polite. Right, Kyle? Kyle? And it's talking to his little brother. And his brother's sitting there. He says, I only answer to one name. Ali Akhtabar Shabada. And he goes, that's a bunch of names. There's only one God. All praise and honor be to Allah. He's constantly trying out a new religion. This little 8-year-old kid is devoting his life to Allah. And later on, he becomes Jewish in Texas.
Are we playing the clip?
No, there's no clip. I couldn't find a clip.
Why did I miss an email where
there's no clip?
We need to do clips though. I heard a clip earlier.
Only done one clip.
Yeah, there's one clip.
Is there any more clips coming? Okay.
Yeah, this movie is absurd, except for that one fucking throwaway fucking character who is great in this movie. I love the kid. Here's a fun little fact for you, or an interesting fact. It's not fun at all. It's an interesting fact. It's more odd than anything. This kid disappeared in 2006 when he was 18 years old. Just disappeared one night. Never seen him again. He's missing. He's a missing person.
Really?
Yeah. 18 years old. He went missing.
That makes it even more
interesting. After playing cards with his friends, they said he was in good spirits. His car was found. He was never found.
Was he playing cards on a lake?
No, they didn't say it was, they say it was in a houseboat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cars
was he Colombian? You said he was like Manny from.
He was like Manny. No, he's a white kid, but he.
Oh, he's white.
You're familiar with Modern Family.
Bear.
Manny's.
Hey,
very,
wait. What? We should probably cut all this out.
Why?
Talk about this off. But the wife was watching some Vine. She became obsessed with Cameron's character. Cameron in real life, whatever his name is. The actor.
Eric Stone Street.
She was watching a bunch of Vines, and apparently you showed up.
I'm in one.
Why?
Because I was sitting next to him on a flight, on a first class flight.
Why were you on a first class flight?
I travel in style.
Who do you think you are?
Fucking travel.
What is that? Do you limp up to the counter? And you're like,
yeah, that's how I got it. Yeah, that's exactly how. Yeah,
because you don't have
a doctor's note. I have a doctor's note. No, that's how they treat the talent.
What talent?
I sat next to Eric Stone Street in a flight. It's true.
Eric Stone Tree.
Eric Stone Street.
Stone Street.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, so Jillian said that you showed
there
up.
Was.
And she was
alarmed.
She was quite confused.
She was quite alarmed.
Yeah.
Anyway. This guy went missing, and no, Manny is very funny in Modern Family because he is so wise beyond his years.
Right,
he's absurdly sophisticated.
Yes.
Much like this little kid in this movie was absurdly sophisticated. He was into like world religions and stuff, and everyone else around him is just into high school football.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he's funny and a good character. Enjoy very much Kyle Moxon
Varsity
in Varsity Blues.
I don't think I ever saw it.
It's a guilty pleasure.
Brian, were you aware that Paul Hogan, yes, Crocodile Dundee, Paul Hogan, wrote a movie?
It was called Crocodile and Me?
No.
Oh.
It was called Lightning Jack, Brian. Came out in 1994. Now, here's a little background.
I know Kangaroo Jack.
This is Lightning Jack.
Okay.
Here's a little background. Crocodile Dundee, original, which, you know what? Not a terrible movie. I mean,
good
it's a punchline.
That's a good movie.
But, you know, it stands up. You could watch it and be entertained. Second one,
absolutely
not so much.
You could.
In 89, 3 years later, Crocodile Dundee came out in 89. 1994, flash forward 5 more years. This is 8 years after, like the math, 8 years after Crocodile Dundee, after Paul Hogan became a huge star in not only in Australia but also in America.
Yeah, world international star.
He wrote a movie because he always wanted to do a classic Western, like a spaghetti Western type, like a sweeping epic Western. And he made a movie called Lightning Jack where he is the star, and he is he's also got a man named Cuba Gooding Jr. as his sidekick.
Zero
as his mute... deaf sidekick.
Well, it's the best way to have Cuba.
And he's phenomenal. Cuba is great
really?
In this movie. He's so good in this movie. This is a couple years before Jerry Maguire.
Yes, it is.
And he is better, as good. It's kind of hard to say better because it's such a different character. But he had to do that mute thing. He had to do that thing like from the throwback to like silent film where it was all in his face. And that, this movie is not available on Fuckflix. You can't send away for it. Can't stream it. However, the entire movie... without any qualms, apparently, is on YouTube. Not even cut. A lot of time movies like are cut, you know, like when you're looking for clips.
The chopped up.
Like one of, like, a scene, like part 7 of 10 of Lightning Jack. No, Lightning Jack, high quality, too, the entire movie. Kind of interesting the way that he funded this movie, Paul Hogan. He put it up for like, it was like public bond or in Australia. You could buy it like a stock.
Huh.
That's how he raised the funds for the movie.
For this movie?
For Lightning Jack.
Was he super rich at that point?
What's that?
I thought he was super rich at that point.
Still, it's a movie. I mean, you're going to be spending millions of dollars, right?
Still
millions and millions.
Money, yeah.
Beverly D'Angelo is also in this, I should say. The movie is absurd. It's a ridiculous movie. It opens up with him robbing a bank, and then all of his spoiler alert, all of his right and left-hand cowboy men get killed. Aww. He's a lone survivor, Bri. Lone survivor.
Much like Ice-T.
And he's very disappointed, not so much that his boys got killed, but that he's not mentioned in the paper, the report.
Oh.
Of it. It's a movie that takes place back in the Western days, Western times. They shot it in the Moab Valley out there where Monument Valley is, in that area, Utah and Arizona area.
Sure.
And he said apparently it was very confusing because there was like four different Westerns shooting all at the same time. So there was all the bunch of cowboys just wandering around the
Moab.
That was
a strong era for Westerns. There probably were a lot of shooting at that point.
But I'd like to say, I'd like to pat myself, 6%, by the way, 6% on Rotten Tomatoes and 5.3 on IMDb, 5.3 out of 10.
Wow.
I'd like to pat myself on the back and say that I was incredibly impressed with Cuba Gooding Jr. in this movie before Jerry Maguire, and I do believe that, but I don't want to like give myself that credit because I'm not 100% sure. But I do believe that I saw this before Jerry Maguire.
What else would you have seen it?
1994. What's that?
You would have seen it on video, you think?
Well, I don't know why I would ever do that. Unless
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I saw this in the theater, and I remember thinking that black guy, who I didn't know at the time, that he was really, really super good. And going back and watching clips, stands up. Mm-hmm. He's channeling Buster Keaton for sure, but not over the top. He's just super good. I don't know what happened to poor Cuba. You know what happened to Cuba? Radio. Never go full tard.
Yeah. That's true. That's what they say.
Radio killed him.
I never saw radio.
I don't think I did either. Neither one of us are going to. Don't try and get cute. I don't want to watch radio.
Why would I make you watch radio?
Because you're a dick like that. You make me watch
movies. What are you talking about?
You made me watch Frozen, Brian. You made me
Frozen
watch Just Friends.
Frozen is one of the best reviewed films of the year. It's going to win an Oscar.
Brian.
Babies is fucking awesome.
Frozen, you watch Lego, the Lego movie, and Frozen back to back.
I might tell me
it's a good movie.
Maybe I'll flick fast them both next week. Number one for me.
Lightning Jack. Cuba Gooding Jr.
There you go. Number one is a film that was recommended to me by many listeners. It's not good, and I hate you all.
Why would they recommend?
I don't know. Well, actually, I do know.
Because it's robots.
No, there is an actor in it who I'm fond of,
mm-hmm.
and he is tied with...
Is it Bean?
It is Bean.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bean and the entire...
Brian's face actually does literally light up when I said Bean. Like, he just becomes instantly happy.
Michael Bean and the entire cast. Lauren German, Milo Ventimiglia, Courtney B. Vance, Ashton Holmes, Rosanna Arquette.
Oh, that's good.
Michael Bean in The Divide from 2012.
The Divide is a good movie.
What?
Brian, we just had this debate.
It's awful.
Do you have something wrong with your brain?
It's great acting.
We had this debate like 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago when you first saw it and you flicked. By the way, two of your top
five.
Please
go back. I probably liked it.
Two of your top five.
I'll give a good review.
Or from like movies from within the last 6 months or something.
That's right.
What's going on? The Divide is a good film.
No. No, it's not.
Loosely, I use the word good loosely, but it's very interesting, and the idea behind it and the story that it tells and where it goes with humanity and how debased we become, how quickly.
The acting is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The story is ridiculous. There is no story.
This is the first film I ever reviewed on AndersonCowan.com.
Sad.
Ever. Because Damien, the guy that runs my website, he also, you know what? A lot of people told me to watch this as well, Brad.
Yeah, this is the best acted bad movie I've ever seen.
The first 20 here's the deal. Like it's a natural disaster?
No, they never say what it is. It seems to be in some sort of nuclear explosion.
Something
type
happens
attack,
that forces they're
takeover.
All like in a storefront type thing.
Right.
And then they're in an apartment.
Yeah, they're an apartment complex.
And they're all forced down into a bomb shelter. And it's
basement,
limited
basically.
Limited storytelling. And there's a group of people, I don't know what, 15 people, 12 people?
I think it's less than that, but yeah, it's 10.
And they're all stuck in this basement.
8 or 10.
And we watch them kind of unravel, all of them, in their own ways. Yep. Now, once they get in the basement, debasing occurs. Great. Very.
The debasement.
Very good movie, Brett. The first 20 minutes above ground, awful movie. Like, B movie. Like, Roger Corman's in the corner snickering about how horrible it is. But once they get down there, not bad.
No, this is not a good movie. I got to look at my notes. Way too long, 122 minutes. Somebody had a field day of the sound design.
I think it's streaming.
I imagine this is fun for the actors.
Very interesting movie.
Bean was subdued.
Seemed a little homophobic.
Characters debased themselves to an absurd degree. Mm-hmm. Mostly just silly and a bit amateurish.
All right.
That Brian, said, if you're a young aspiring actor and you're bored, you could do worse.
I feel like you're a character that was rightfully cut out of Magnolia who's just speaking what's in his mind.
No, that's a good point. Now I'm reading my notes for the first time.
Number one for me! Are we done? This is it? We're finally
number
putting this fucker to bed?
Mine was a tie.
Brian, this is a movie that I've talked about, not at length, but it's come up before. Tiptoes.
Almost length.
Tiptoes.
That's the name of the movie.
Tiptoes.
Tiptoes.
Talking about Tiptoes a couple weeks ago on the old After Disaster.
Okay.
Mike Carano and Tyler were concerned that this movie exists, that they weren't aware of it.
I don't know those names.
It stars Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Beckinsale, Patricia Arquette, David Alan Grier.
Another Arquette.
And Gary Oldman.
Wow, what a cast.
Now, Gary Oldman is my number one good performance in a terrible
okay.
movie.
Okay.
Now, Matthew Bright wrote and directed this movie, and it's very, very sad because this is the movie that killed his career. Now, Matthew Bright, he is known mainly from Freeway, which is a fantastic fucking movie.
Okay.
Punk rock. Love that movie. Freeway is awesome. With Reese Witherspoon. Badass bitch. I think she was on top five badass bitches.
Nice.
Kiefer Sutherland plays Bob, the rapist. All right. Then he made a Freeway 2 as well. Vincent Gallo shows up at the end. Freeway 1, he wanted to make a whole series of movies that I'm not even talking about Tiptoes.
In and around a freeway.
They're all allegories. They're like, that was Robin, Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay.
Was Freeway. And she played Little Red Riding Hood. And then Freeway 2 was Hansel and Gretel. Oh, it was good.
Hmm.
But it wasn't nearly as good as Freeway 1. But I watched Freeway 2, like, sitting pretty much next to Matthew Bright, who was very nervous because he was watching it with an audience for the first time. I was up at Toronto Film Festival back. It was like 14 years ago or something, but sure. It was really interesting watching him. And he said, this might be the last movie I get to make because I'm really upsetting people by making movies the way that I want to make them. And I could understand that when I watched the movie and there was like, Vincent Gallo has a giant prosthetic cock at the end and he's just sitting there. It was inappropriate, to say the least. Tiptoes stars also Peter Dinklage, which you probably know. He's a little actor.
Little man.
And angry elf. He is. He's very angry. He's a station agent. Very angry man.
Yes.
Better be him or else I'm a horrible person. That was him, right?
I have no idea.
Peter Dinklage.
But everyone knows Peter Dinklage. He's in the Thrones show.
So according to Peter Dinklage, this is a direct quote. According
by the way,
him.
Peter and Dinklage, both good names for a dick.
Will you look up Peter Dinklage and make sure that I'm not... not crazy. Yeah, he was station agent.
Both good words for a penis, though. Peter and Dinklage.
It's true, Brian. Pete Dink. Here we go. His direct quote is, the original cut of this movie was gorgeous. That was his word. But the director was fired shortly after turning it in. That's Matthew Bright got fired. And the people who fired him recut the film into a rom-com with dwarves, which is exactly what you get when you watch
So
Tiptoes.
The original cut wasn't that?
No, they did not like whatever Matthew Bright did, which I'm sure was hilarious and wrong
Edgy.
And awful. Huh. But they said, you know what, like, we got such a great cast. They probably paid some of these people handsomely to be in their movie, and they wanted to try and recoup some of their costs, at least overseas. I could just hear the talks going on.
Sure.
But what you get is just... oh, so disgusting and awful with the music, and they're trying to make it cutesy, but it's not, because the director had something completely different in mind. There's actually a scene where David Alan Grier is like banging, dry humping a little person, but it's supposed to be dark, but they try and make it funny and cute. Oh, but watching Gary
Sounds
Oldman
perverse.
Watching Gary Oldman play a little person, almost like
Oh, yeah, he's on his knees
He's on
or
his
something,
knees
right?
with his shoes.
Oh, yeah. They like, did this on, oh, my God,
like
they did
Conway's
this on...
Conway's dad, the dwarf.
On How Did This Get Made? That's right. Gary Oldman's on his knees the whole time.
And
oh,
he
yeah.
put in a hell of a performance. What it is Matthew McConaughey is married to Kate Beckinsale, and they're about to...
And they're brothers, right? No, McConaughey and
he finds out,
Gary Oldman?
That's his dad. He finds out that she's pregnant. I don't even know if they're married. Finds out she's pregnant, and he goes, oh, fuck, now I got to tell you what the deal is. My parents, they're little people. That means that there might be a little person in your stomach, and I should tell you that before. So then they go to meet his family, and God knows what was supposed to have happened. But Tiptoes, definitely worth talking about, definitely worth knowing about, and it's not available on the old Fuckflix. I think you might be able to send away for it, but not a good movie at all because of what evil money grubbers did to it. Those fuckers. God, I wish that the original cut was somewhere. Why not just let it be somewhere?
I know you don't listen to other podcasts, but you should listen to that episode of How Did This Get Made, because they delve in. That's what they do for an hour, is they delve into other bad movies, and this is one of their episodes.
2003 Tiptoes. It's also known, Brian, as Tiny Tiptoes.
Oh, stop it.
That's what it's called. That's what it says. I'm not making that up. What a cast, though, right? Huh? Matthew McConaughey, Kate Beckinsale, Patricia Arquette, Gary Oldman.
Yeah, it's a great cast.
Dag. You know, I remember Dag being on Loveline talking about this movie. I was very excited.
And then this happened.
And then, yeah.
Let's hear the listener top five, Logan.
Running time is 90 minutes. In France, it's 91 minutes.
I'm curious to know what the listeners came up with.
Well, because of the subjective nature of this week's topic, there were only five movies that had more than one vote. So.
Perfect.
And one of those had more votes than the other ones, which all had the same amount of number of votes.
Okay.
So there's only a number one and then a four-way tie for number two.
Let's hear the four-way tie.
So, number two, Meryl Streep in The Iron Lady.
Interesting.
Never saw that, actually.
Very dull. Very boring. But yeah, she was very good. So you can say that about a lot of Meryl Streep movies. She's always good, but some of her movies are not.
I can see that.
Number 2B, Gary Oldman in Lost in Space.
Oh, I was going to be so excited if it was Tiptoes. Lost in Space. Not a good movie.
No, guess not.
Remember the fake CGI, what's his name in the beginning?
No, I never saw it.
You never saw Lost in Space?
I haven't seen most of
What's the guy
movies.
From Friends? Joey. What's his name?
Oh,
Matt LeBlanc?
Yeah, Matt LeBlanc. There's like this scene, advent of CGI. It was like still kind of, it was soon after Jurassic Park. And there was a scene where for some reason they had him like in a ball and they couldn't actually get to him like, because of scheduling and they needed to reshoot. So what they did is they CGI'd him. And I didn't even know. I saw it and then I read about it later and I went back. I'm like, holy shit, he is. He's a cartoon. Look at that. Like speaking parts and everything. It's kind of impressive.
Wow, okay.
Lost in Space. Yeah.
Number 2C, Ryan Gosling in Only God Forgives.
Ooh. I would have said, who was on my list is what the fuck? Where is she? Kristen Scott Thomas. In that,
oh,
in the same
she was
movie.
Great, yeah.
She was good.
She was better than him. I think she could have been up for like some awards there because she was so good, but she only had that one scene. But he wasn't really acting in that movie.
He was just kind of walking
brooding.
Around. Yeah.
He had that one scene on the bridge where he yelled, but I didn't even like that. I saw that coming from a mile away. I'm like, he's about to scream at her to take the dress off.
True.
Take the dress off.
Number 2D, Philip Seymour Hoffman in A Long Came Polly.
Good too call.
Soon. Too
good
soon.
Call.
I didn't like his character in that movie.
It came up last week, and I agree 100%.
I don't like the sharded thing. I thought he was above that. I think he's above that.
I disagree.
And the number one good performance in a bad movie is, and I don't know. I didn't know this was considered a bad movie.
You're editorializing. I don't like that.
Tom Hanks in Forrest Gump.
What?
That's the only
that's
one I got more than the other
clever,
ones.
Really?
Yeah, how many film hipsters right there.
What? No, I guess
Forrest Gump.
That one got the most votes.
It's a fantastic movie. If you take out the goddamn running, the running, definitely don't like the running. What else don't I like about Forrest Gump?
There's not much not to like.
The beard and the running, I think, really bother.
They're
me.
In the same scene, so
everything
you're
else in is, luck. Yeah, just cut that shit out, Zemeckis, and you got a nearly perfect film. Right? Everything's viable. Except
yeah, you're right. The running was completely extraneous to the plot.
Kind of out of left field, and it was absurd.
Yep.
I can buy him like becoming a ping pong champion and... Hanging out
oh,
with
yeah, and the
bub
and the shrimping and everything. Yeah, I agree. You want to hear my also rants?
I really like Gary Sinise only having less of Sinise because I'm not a giant fan, so I like him in that role a lot.
And there was less Sinise. It's fine for you. also rants for me. Okay, there's a lot, but this is a very fruitful topic. Giovanni Ribisi is good in a lot of bad things, including The Gift and including Middlemen. Patricia Clarkson is great in aforementioned Friends
wait,
and Benefits.
The Gift is a good movie.
The Gift is a good movie.
I like The Gift.
You're fucking
I
nuts.
Enjoy The Gift quite a bit. Keanu Reeves being a wife beater, awesome.
I enjoyed the two gifts that Katie Holmes gave us.
Katie
in
Holmes,
film.
Floating naked, dead and naked.
You saw a nice topless scene though at the end.
Kate Blanchett, is that who you're no, you said
no,
Ribisi. She was
Giovanni.
Great. Kate Blanchett was fantastic.
Adrian Brody in Predators and Adrian Brody in Summer of Sam is very, very good as well. Benicio del Toro in a terrible movie called The Pledge. Paul Giamatti in Planet of the Apes was very, very good. The rest of the film was bad. Bernie Mac in Charlie's Angels 2, good, bad. Alec Baldwin, good, in Rock of Ages, bad. Andy Dick, good, Division 3, less said the better.
Uncomfortable. We had the writer-director on the program.
Andy Dick was great. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt in a little movie called G.I. Joe. Fantastic. And by the way, two movies that I think are overrated because the actors are so good. Primal Fear, Ed Norton. He's fantastic. Without him, the movie suffers greatly. And Jim Carrey in Man on the Moon. Without him, that is a very, very, very ordinary movie.
I'm going to say this right now. Because of him, it's an ordinary movie. It could have been really, really good
Ooh,
if they got an actual actor that could have pulled it off.
Well, the story was boring, I thought.
It was Jim Carrey doing his best impersonation, which is not that good.
But the thing
Andy
is...
Andy Kaufman.
Irrespective of the
Andy
actor,
Kaufman's still alive. He should just come out and play it himself.
Yeah. But there was no struggle for the character. Andy Kaufman went through nothing. He didn't go through anything. He just was there. A series of stories about his career.
He was dying. He had to go to Mexico. Or
dying in the
lot. South America.
Spoiler alert.
He saw spaghetti getting pulled out of a man's ass through a sheet.
It was his guts.
I think it was supposed to be hemorrhoids, wasn't it?
It's supposed to be cancerous guts.
No, what he was watching when he realized that it was fake.
Chicken. It was raw chicken that they were pulling out.
There was spaghetti involved as well.
It was spaghetti.
All right, let's put a poll.
No extra for you?
No, I don't like to talk at length about movies that are bad, Brian. That's not my thing.
All right, well, that's our list. Gambling time, Logan.
All right, last week you guys gambled on The Monuments Men. At the time, the Rotten Tomato score was 58%, Anderson bid 63%, and Brian 70%.
Oh, 70%. What was I thinking?
Now, currently, Wednesday after release, the Monuments Men's Rotten Tomato score is 34%.
Oh, you're back. You're back, baby.
I thought for sure I lost this week. I have nothing prepared. Oh, I would have done some good handiwork,
so many movies that came up this week that
some
I haven't
good
seen.
Good handiwork.
You know, I didn't see what you talked at length about was Freeway.
We don't do this. Interesting. Freeway. Interesting.
But you have whatever you want, man. I'm down from
that now. Thing you're speeding up. You know what?
Is that still around, Freeway Insurance?
Yeah. You know what?
What?
I'm doing that.
Freeway.
I normally would never, ever give you something you suggest, but...
I only brought up something I'd never seen.
Freeway. One of the all-time greats, forever.
Can you stream it?
I doubt it.
Fuck.
I doubt it's still around. For whatever reason, Matthew Bright got completely blacklisted.
I had Despicable Me 2 coming, so I'll send that back.
What?
I
just
followed
the first one?
No.
Brian, you can't do things like that.
I just followed the Oscar movies on my queue.
You would be okay sitting there watching it knowing that you didn't see the first one? You're missing all sorts of throwbacks?
I don't feel like it's plot dependent.
That doesn't matter about plot. It matters about throwbacks and like little idiosyncrasies of the characters.
Well, now I'll never know. So I'm going to send it back so I can get Freeway. By the way, has anyone ever sent back Despicable Me 2 to get Freeway?
It's probably never happened in the history of the universe. Yeah.
Wow.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'll be the first.
Yeah, Freeway. Check out Freeway.
All right. What's next, Logan?
That's pretty exciting.
All right. This week is a movie that I confused a couple weeks ago with That Awkward Moment, and that is About Last Night.
Fuck, is that really? Isn't there like a RoboCop or something coming out?
Yeah, RoboCop came out today, so doesn't count.
Why not? Can we do it? Have you seen the score?
Yeah. We have.
Anderson
53
sucks.
Or some shit. About Last Night.
what is this, a black movie?
Yeah, Brian, it's a dumb Kevin Hart movie.
Wow, guys.
I hate Kevin Hart.
Well, then you have a lot of movies that you have to avoid.
That's actually very true. I don't know anything about this. About Last Night, is this a Valentine's Day movie?
It's coming out this weekend. There's like three other Valentine's Day type movies coming out.
This is the one, remember, that had that 3D cube like poster art for it in the movie theater that I went to, and I'm like, wow, look at that, it's a black movie and Kevin Hart's not on the poster, he's not in this movie. That's kind of weird because he's in every single black movie that's
out. Look closer.
Right. And then I walked around to like the other side to get out,
he
and
was
I,
wrapped around,
he was like on the other side, he was on the other cube side. I'm like, oh,
I knew it,
it's weird.
All right, what's your number?
Heinz 57.
57. Yeah. I have 25.
White guilt. Those critics have a lot of white guilt.
All right.
Wow.
Well,
white guilt.
The Wednesday before release, About Last Night's Rotten Tomato score is 100%.
Yeah.
Wait, how many? How
with
many,
five
wait,
reviews.
How many reviews?
Five black critics have seen this movie.
Oh, come on.
Kevin Hart's five friends.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, look, maybe it'll be a great movie.
What?
Maybe I'll be wrong.
No, actually, you know what? I feel bad because those movies aren't made for me, and they don't really have a whole lot of what I'm looking for in movies. They're almost all rom-coms, which I would avoid if they're white or black. But I do feel racist because I miss them left and right. But I know that they don't have anything that I'm going to connect with, not because of the black thing, but because it's a god. They're all rom-fucking-coms. You know
I'll tell you what I did learn from movies, actually.
You hear what I'm saying, Brad?
Soul Brother to Buku.
Oh. All enters must hang.
Get that drop.
Tubuku. Tubuku.
Soul Brother Tubuku.
That's
what?
You know what I'm quoting, right?
Yeah. You know what I'm quoting, right?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I want to make sure that you
know, my diary.
I'm just bringing that up. I like she's making the hand gestures.
That's
she's
right.
Going, Tubuku.
Thank you, Dead Cat Hat. Dead Cat Hat was a feature artist this week. Station Change is the album. Check them out, AndersonandBrian.com. And that is where you go to do everything you need to do Film Vault related. If you're like, what was that movie they talked about? That fucking bad movie that had a good performance in it? Just go to the old honorable mentions section and you can see all the films we talked about this week and every week for a list of the films we discussed. Leave your comments. Tell me how wrong I am about everything.
Dead Cat Hat took a turn, a left turn.
Dead Cat Hat.
Dead Cat Hat. I said,
yeah,
left turn here.
What do you mean? What sound with the tunes?
Yeah, huh? What's going on, elevator?
If you want to be the next Dead Cat, this is their groove, their jam.
This is my floor. This is where I get off and say, doing it for Mango.